This is the Cranium Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Cranium Report with your host, Mike Adams.
And a happy new year to all of you out there in Radioland from high and lofty hills above Appalachia. Welcome, my friends. It is the one and only Cranium Report, and I'm your host, the Mouth of the South, Micah Hanks. Now, we've taken a little time off for the holidays, and now, having escaped from the thonic and abysmal realm of the Lovecraftian Elder Gods, it is with great delight that I welcome each and every one of you to this first 2012 edition of the Cranium Report. As always, joining me in studio is our fantastic and talented production staff, the one and only Mr. Chris Hayes, our producer. Chris, how are you?
I'm great tonight. How are y'all doing?
I hope everyone is doing as well as Chris and I are doing. We are certainly doing fantastic. And behind... Wait, what's going on here? Are we missing somebody? Is there something not quite right?
No, I think everyone's present and accounted for.
Everyone's present and accounted for. We'll leave it at that, won't we? Oh, goodness. And you, my dear listeners, welcome to the program. It is the Cranium Report, celebrating our very first broadcast of 2012. We are beating the odds in order to be here tonight. Let me tell you, Chris and I are both feeling, well, a little under the weather. A little under the ground, maybe even. But then again, that's just par for the course when you listen to a program like this.
I blame it on the black mold that lives so far down in the Mohorovic discontinuity.
I know, right? What is up with that? That black mold, it's like the creeping death down there, you know? I tell you, I've got a real problem with that these days. And literally, I hardly slept last night because I was feeling so crappy. I got a Christmas cough. You've heard of the ghosts of Christmas past? Well, I think I've been haunted by a Christmas cough. A cough of Christmas past, perhaps. You know, Christmas is far enough back in 2011 now. We can actually refer to that as the past, right? I think we're okay. I think we can get away with that. Where is our engineer?
I'm right here.
Oh, yes. Well, our engineer for the evening, at very least, Mr. Chris Hayes. Yeah, the man with the kind eyes isn't here tonight for some reason. Now, I'll say that we have had inclement weather here in the mountains for the last little bit. But, you know, I mean, I remember in my radio days, we had a name for people who wouldn't get out because it was snowing a little bit. You remember what we call those?
Pansies?
Close. We called them snow weenies.
Snow weenies. You know what? Back in my day, we used to camp out at the station and just stay there all week because we knew the snow was going to happen. We didn't know when it was going to happen, but we knew it was going to happen. So we decided, you know, for journalistic integrity, we would stay there all week long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the way I roll, too. You know, that's what I'm used to. That's the code that you lived by. I remember in my early days in radio, kind of like Art Bell, you know, he said the first 3 years he worked in radio, they wouldn't even let him on a microphone. And the first time I was ever allowed onto a radio microphone, I was so, what was it? I had choice words, you know, that I'd planned out. I'll choose not to use them for the time being. Let's just say I was a rambunctious youth, and I decided I would stand in opposition of the authoritarian establishment that was this terrestrial radio. And so when they said, all right, we'll let you say one thing, tell them your name. And I went under the microphone and I said, my name is James Bond. I wasn't allowed to talk for another 2 weeks after that. I was punished. That's how I got my start in radio. First thing I ever said on a radio microphone before about an 80,000 listener base was, my name is Bond, James Bond. And they were so pissed.
I think my first thing ever said on the radio microphone was, what was it, 2 years ago when we were filling in for Speaking of Strange? I said, I'm not going to get into that on the radio.
That's the first thing you've ever said. Yeah, Chris, tell us all about it. I'm not going to get into that. Yeah. Yes, we were filling in for Joshua P. Warren on his Speaking of Strange program, which, as I understand, now is actually being carried not only by stations in Western North Carolina, but also a station out in Nevada. So, yeah, he's got a little bit wider listening base now, and kudos for that. Joshua's a good friend, and we always love to hear when friends of ours are doing well with their many endeavors. There are a lot of people out a little west of here who are doing really, really well tonight. Of course, it is Tuesday evening. If we want to go ahead and toss a date out there, it's Tuesday, January 3rd. People who are listening to the broadcast live tonight will be able to hear this as it happens. The rest of you will be downloading the podcast and getting not only weird news and anomalistics from beyond the fringes of insight and insanity like we normally do every week on this program, but we're also going to be giving you a few updates from Iowa. And I know people are already rolling their eyes. If they don't live in the hollow earth like we do, they're digging holes trying to get down there right now.
Wait. Why do we even care about Iowa tonight? It's Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. Right, yes.
The election's not till Thursday.
Well, at least according to some of our field correspondents. But you know what? I tell you, apparently most of the people in the mainstream media seem to think otherwise. For instance, Wall Street Journal reported earlier today, Iowans gather as GOP hopefuls make final push. Final push for what? Iowa voters were gathering Tuesday evening, that's today, in schools and community centers to cast the first votes of a turbulent Republican campaign that has seen a rolling series of frontrunners but failed to generate widespread enthusiasm for any candidate. Now, let me stop right here. I'm sure people out there, a few of them at least, are rolling their eyes. I know that people like to get an escape from politics and the mainstream kind of news when they listen to this program. So why would we bore them to tears with election updates? Well, I'll tell you why. Because there's a fascinating thing happening right now in Iowa. And now we are trying to remain unbiased, of course, to maintain journalistic integrity. But as we have always done so on this program, I've liked to focus in the past on Ron Paul a good bit because of the way that the media, the mainstream media, has tended to ignore him despite the obvious presence that he has. And now it has come to a point where it is difficult to ignore someone like Ron Paul because he's a front runner in Iowa. He's literally neck and neck with the expected establishment front runner, Mitt Romney. And so tonight could indeed be a very historic night, whether you love or hate either of those two guys I just named. It's pretty remarkable that someone like Ron Paul, you know, he's not exactly the best speaker. There's been a huge scandal recently about these newsletters that were published under his name in the 1990s. That indeed, I've dug these things up. I've actually downloaded PDFs and read a number of them. I'll just tell you, you know, I've liked Ron Paul a lot in the past, and even I will admit that the content in some of those newsletters was pretty harsh. There were certainly some fairly racist overtones. There were certainly some fairly sexist, not so much sexist as I guess, I will say homophobic overtones and sentiments that were being expressed. It was pretty terrible. Now, by the same token, Ron Paul also says that the reason that he didn't know about these is because there was a ghostwriter who had been authoring these things for him. I don't doubt that. I believe that. In fact, because I think it's pretty obvious in an election year, or even not in an election year, and the guy, whether or not he's been trying to be elected for president, he's served as a congressman off and on for almost, gosh, let's see here, how long now? I know the first time he ran for president was on the Libertarian ticket in 88, so it's been a while now. But the point is that, sure, there are going to be things that slip through the cracks from time to time, but then again, also, if your name's going to be on it, you should know something about that. I think that that's probably diminished a little bit of Ron Paul's appeal, but you know what? Not enough to knock him down from being still one of the potential front runners in the Iowa caucus. And it's fascinating to me, he being the anti-establishment candidate, that he is now surging for, that he's actually shown and proven that indeed maybe he does have the kind of support that he would need to garner some serious attention in an election year. I mean, it's way too early right now to know anything for certain. And of course, Ronald Reagan, back in the day, you know, he lost Iowa and still went on to win the election. A lot of presidential hopefuls have lost Iowa and then gone on to win the nomination. So we don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be interesting. We'll be looking at that just a little bit tonight, and we're also going to get into some other things. We're also going to talk about monsters. We're going to talk about humanzies, which is a very favorite subject of mine. We'll talk a little bit about some generally weird news, and then also a few rather conspiratorial things that we'll be getting to here in just a bit, right after this first break, which we're not to just yet. So I do want to point out a couple of things. Let's go ahead and let's get into some conspiracy right now. Is that cool with you, Chris?
When are we ever not in conspiracy mode?
That's a good question. And you'll have to
wait. Is your battery out of your phone?
My battery. Oh yes, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Please make sure your batteries are out of your phones, smart or otherwise.
Yes, but then you have to put it in another room because, you know, of course, there's still a backup battery. Remember, the Reverend was telling us.
Well, yeah, there's the phantom power.
Yes, there's the phantom power. You know, we have phantom power that powers our microphones here.
But the phantom power in our cell phones is actually tapped into by the CIA and the Russian government's psi agents.
Ah, yes, indeed. They want to know what we're talking about. Those goons over there in the dark hills of the Appalachians, they scare them. You know why they fear us? They fear us because we're the middle class.
You know, if you know what's good for you, you'll cut off all contact with Micah Hanks.
Do you know what? You know what's frightening about the middle class is that they're resourceful, and we are resourceful. Okay, no, seriously, enough of that. What I'm getting at here is tonight, as we're talking about the Iowa caucuses and all this, we know that the caucuses could put Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney in a good position to wrap up the nomination. A lot of people are also hopeful for Ron Paul. Mr. Rick Santorum, out of virtually nowhere, has seen a sudden surge here in the last few hours leading up to the Iowa caucus. So there's a lot of speculation as to what's going to happen. One thing's for certain, though, the potential frontrunner from about 2 weeks ago, Newt Gingrich, has plummeted. The guy has plummeted. Unfortunately, this is just about one of those anything could possibly go situations, and we're very interested in seeing where it's going to go. But now, this is funny. Drudge Report linked this earlier today. It's a link from Alex Jones' Infowars.com website, okay? Talking about how tonight's Iowa vote count could take place at a secret location.
Mike, are you doing it wrong?
How am I doing it wrong? I'm sorry, I have to keep hitting the cough button, by the way. Folks, we are feeling a little under the weather. Let's just say, you know, we didn't tell them why we were out last week. You know, we didn't get to that yet. Should we tell them when we come back from the break?
Yeah, when we come back from the break.
Yeah, we're going to have to go to a break here. Well, I don't know. Maybe we should just go ahead and tell them now, though. Okay, finish that thought. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say you're doing it wrong. If your throat can handle it, you need to be using the Alex Jones voice.
No, I don't think my throat can handle it tonight. I think it's going to have to be the mouth of the South himself tonight. You know, speaking of mouth of the South, I was on Ben Grundy and Aaron Wright's Mysterious Universe podcast. Of course, I'm a staff writer for Mysterious Universe, and they're very good friends. And every year, their year-end, that's why we didn't do a podcast this year for New Year's, is because I was on their podcast that night. No, I'm just kidding, actually. No, we need a little extra time off this year. I tell you, we've busted our butts. You and I haven't missed a single show, Mr. Hayes, since...
Well, except for last week's.
Well, except for last week's, we haven't missed a single show. In fact, we did 1 week where we did two shows, and that's been since, what, May of 2011?
May of 2011, yes.
That's a pretty good track record. The Grayling Report's been going strong. Let me tell you, there's some big stuff coming up in the next year, and we're going to get to a little of that here in just a moment. But I do want to touch on this thing about this secret location for tonight's vote. This is quite interesting, and this was Infowars.com that reported this. So for those of you in the conspiratorial market, this one goes out to you. Tonight's final vote tally for the Iowa caucuses will take place at a secret, undisclosed location, an announcement that has stoked fears of vote fraud against Ron Paul supporters. Concerns that were heightened following a Republican insider's claim that the GOP establishment will not allow Paul to win. Now, whether or not you buy into conspiracy theories, I'll tell you right now, that doesn't really sound that far-fetched to me. The final Iowa vote count normally takes place at state party headquarters in Des Moines, but following dubious quote-unquote security concerns about Occupy protesters disrupting the tabulation process, the Republican Party of Iowa announced that it would be moving the final vote count to a secret, undisclosed location. That's interesting. I guess we'll see how that happens. I've also heard some concerns about the infamous Anonymous group, which it's kind of hard to call them a group because, again, you know, they're anonymous and they do carry out their operations through anonymity. But there's also been some talk about Anonymous trying to hack into the voting machines and things like that. So paranoia and conspiracies are running amok in Iowa tonight. It is quite amazing. And indeed, I think that fits a pretty good criteria for discussion on the program. When we come back from this first break, though, there was one candidate I'd kind of hoped would jump into the election this year. And, you know, there are some that the mainstream media aren't even talking about. There are a couple of them that are on the ballots in Iowa that you still haven't seen on Fox News or on CNN or any of these. But there was one candidate I hoped would have jumped in, and he didn't.
Micah.
What I do know.
I don't know how many times I have to tell you this. No matter how bad you want it, Oprah is not running for president.
Well, you can't get a guy down for trying or for hoping, right? You can't take away my hope. My friends.
The first act as president is everyone gets a new car.
And then everybody's
but it's used. And then it's new to you.
And then all the constituents start crying. And then they get new watches and all that good stuff. Yeah, actually, you know, I don't know. Maybe an Oprah candidacy wouldn't be so bad. Well, I'll tell you what.
I could use a new car.
No, the potential candidate I was thinking of is a media personality, but it wasn't Oprah. We'll talk about who that was when we come back from this break. It's the Grayling Report, and I am the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, joined in studio by co-host and producer Mr. Chris Hayes. We'll be back again right after this.
My name is Sue Smith. I'm 38 and I work at a graphic design company. And the teenage me would tell you,
I wouldn't be into drawing and art if it wasn't for big brothers, big sisters. My big sister showed me early on that I could do anything. And to the young me,
that meant a lot. My big sister's name is Sheila, and Sheila is the reason that this 8-year-old grows up to have an amazing job as a graphic designer.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
From the dark disquiet that is the Moho Discontinuity, welcome back to the program. Your favorite weekly Graylians broadcasting live from the Hollow Earth. As always, folks, if you're just tuning in for the first time, keep in mind this is every Tuesday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It's here in the United States. And, of course, around the globe on the Internet, people download the podcast by the thousands every week. And that's, of course, probably where our largest listenership exists. Such a demand for being able to have things that you can take with you, well, on demand. Download, take with you, and listen on the go. And, of course, we're happy to have the Graylian Report available to folks just like that. You know what we need to do, Chris? We need to have an iPhone app designed. I think we should do that. Let's make that a New Year's resolution. Would you,
Well, just iPhone, or are we going to exclude...
No, Android, too.
Android.
Yeah.
What about a BlackBerry app?
Well, you know,
I'm sorry, but I still have a BlackBerry.
I use a BlackBerry, too, because we are businessmen, kind of like Burke Devlin.
What do you know about Burke Devlin?
I know a lot about Burke Devlin.
What have you said to him?
I can't tell you, because if I told... Well, look, it's on page 20 of the report. Just look in the report.
No.
We were talking during the last segment about what's going on in Iowa tonight and how the anti-establishment candidate Ron Paul could very well lead the race. But then again, it's a little early for that to really have a whole lot of bearing on the election, because I guarantee you Mitt Romney's going to do really well in New Hampshire, and then by the time we start seeing some serious activity out there in South Carolina, well, a little south of here, maybe we'll be able to actually have field reporters there for that. Anything could go at that
point.
Well,
I mean, technically, isn't it all north from here where we're at currently?
Technically, well, you know, I don't know, because, you know, it's north isn't really up. North is kind of in a direction, in a terrestrial sense. Everything is up
so
for us.
Up from here, okay.
Yeah, all up right. And out. Up and right. Edom. But there was one candidate that I'd hoped would enter the race in 2012, you know, and he didn't end up doing it. I think that there were certain regulations. Yes, of course, I'm talking about none other than Coast to Coast AM host George Norrie. Now, we spoke with George a little while ago about this, and I asked him. Here's what George had to say about his potential candidacy in 2012.
George, I have to ask. There had been at one time some talk of a presidential bid on your part. You even mentioned this in your UFO magazine column. Is there any hope still that there will ever be a chance one day I'll get to refer to you as President Norrie?
Well, the clock is ticking, and if I was going to make my move for that campaign, it should be pretty soon. I think it's time for some change. I probably won't make that run because of specific FCC regulations. Once you're a declared candidate, you got to take yourself off the air, and I'm not leaving. So I've got to weigh that with with that kind of responsibility. I was approached by a group several years ago who wanted to know if I'd contemplate running in 2012. And, you know, we kicked it around a little bit. But, you know, I'd really have to get going to do that. Problem is, there probably aren't any candidates out there that really excite America right now.
Well, and, I agree.
You know, we probably would have a great chance. If my audience voted for me, we'd be halfway there.
I think you're right. And, George, you know, as a listener, of course, you know, I'm fairly familiar with your political views on things and some of the candidates and other individuals you've had on the program. So, you know, indeed, you would have my vote, and I can tell you that right now. In fact,
at least I'd have one.
Well, you'd have more than one. I think you'd have everyone here at Graylian International Headquarters. And that said, you know, 2012 is going to be a pivotal year, whether or not it has to do with the presidential election. Many people say the world's going to end. You know, I've talked with some friends, Scotty Roberts and, you know, Bill Burns and Nancy, about having an end-of-the-world party. So if we end up doing that, maybe you can join us. We'll see the world out in style, huh?
I'll join you, but I'll take the positive approach. I don't think the world will end in 2012. I think we're going to have some solar events. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's heating up. And, you know, the sun continues to send M and X flares our way. But in terms of December 21st, 2012, I'll be there. I'll be part of your party, but we'll be toasting 2013.
Well, I certainly hope that George will be joining us, because what we were talking about during that segment, of course, and this is something we've got to throw out there, Scotty Roberts, editor and publisher of Intrepid Magazine, and I are right now planning a very grand-scale event that's going to be taking place in Minneapolis around early October of this year. It's going to be called the Paradigm Symposium, and the Paradigm Symposium is going to feature a lot of fantastic guest speakers. I'll tell you, and I think I can go ahead and say this publicly, a lot of what we're working on right now has to kind of stay under wraps because we're still in the planning and development stages, but we have gotten commitments from, of course, Nick Redfern, Marie D. Jones, Scotty and I, of course, will be kind of hosting this big thing, but we'll be speaking as well. Chris here will be involved and we'll be there all weekend. In fact, Chris and I will be doing a live broadcast from this event in Minneapolis, but let me tell you what else. Eric Von Daniken has also expressed interest in doing this and has said that he will be able to attend as well. So we're working out logistics for that. This is going to be a fantastic event. And I can tell you right now, as soon as we have more details here on the Graylian Report, you'll be hearing more about that. In fact, we'll also have my partner in crime, Mr. Scotty Roberts, on the program to talk a little bit about that, because he's got a new book coming out right now that George Norrie, who we just heard from, actually has endorsed and had a nice little blurb on the front of it. It's a book called Rise and Fall of the Nephilim. So, you know, this conference is going to be dealing with some theological issues, ancient mysteries, and ancient archaeology. We're going to be talking about, as a matter of fact, this was my idea. I want to incorporate artificial intelligence into this because, you know, artificial intelligence and the potential for a intelligence explosion, or what we might call a technological singularity in the coming years, these are very interesting to me. I incorporate them into this program with regard to their potential relevance to the UFO mystery. And, of course, I'll hope to have a book coming out about that soon as well. And so I think it's going to be pretty good if Scotty Roberts and I can lump all this stuff together and make a huge, worthwhile, and very, very entertaining and educational event that will address all these sorts of subjects. Make 2012 not the end of the world, but perhaps the beginning of a new world. But not a new world order, of course. We don't want to have that kind of thing. No, my friends. This is going to be quite a paradigm shift, and hence we've settled on that name, the Paradigm Symposium. More on that as it develops, and we'll be certain to keep you tuned in on that here on the program. But that said, we do want to invite folks, if you're interested in calling into the program, and you can visit www.graylianreport.com at any time. In fact, I want to direct your attention to graylianreport.com anyway, because we've got a news story we're going to be touching on that's featured there at the site right now. But there at graylianreport.com, that's www.graylianreport.com. You'll see in the toolbar at the top of the page, Graylian Report on the radio on the far right. Click on that, and there's all the information you need to know about how to listen live to this program every Tuesday from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can also call into the program. You can send us text messages, emails. You can use Skype. The number of ways to reach the program, all of them are fit and fiddle, as they say here in the mountains, in terms of ready and raring to go. There's two colloquialisms rolled into one. How's that, Chris? The mouth of the South lived up to his name. And speaking of, I never got that out, by the way. Last week when I went on the end of the year podcast with Ben and Aaron down with Mysterious Universe, one of the listeners tweeted that she was loving this podcast and it was filling her mind full of conspiracies, and that she loved to listen to Micah Hanks talk because he sounds like Elvis. You know the last person who told me I sounded like Elvis was?
No one?
No, actually somebody did.
Has anyone ever heard Elvis?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure people... Yeah, remember? He said, "Oh, something wrong with my lip." But see, I don't think I sound like that. People say I sound like Elvis, but the last person who told me I sounded like Elvis was Jim Mars. I was sitting in Barley's Tap Room in Pizzeria having a beer with Jim Mars, and he says, "Man, I bet you do an awesome Elvis impersonation because you sound just like the king." And I said, "Did you know Elvis?" And he apparently had met Elvis at some point and actually knew how Elvis sounded when he just spoke to you, you know, like in a conversational way. And so he said that my speech pattern, being the mouth of the South that I am, you know, I wasn't the mouth of the South back then. I was a humble producer and fill-in host from time to time on Speaking of Strange with Joshua Warren. Yes, Jim Mars said that I sounded like Elvis, and now apparently people all around the world think that I sound like Elvis. I get that a lot, especially from the Australian listenership. The Australians love the Southern accent, and they think that I sound just like Elvis.
Well, maybe I should go on Ben and Aaron's show. They'll think I sound like George Clooney or Buddy Holly.
I think you need to go on Ben and Aaron's show anyway. I think that they would love to have you on the program. And, of course, if you aren't hip to what we're talking about, that's Mysterious Universe, the Mysterious Universe podcast. And
you know what? Why don't we just... How about we just fly over there and crash their next podcast?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I've been wanting to crash Ben and Aaron's podcast for like 100 years. So I wouldn't be opposed to doing that in the least. But, yes, you can listen to that podcast if you're not familiar with it at mysteriousuniverse.org. That's the website. And, of course, our website, graylianreport.com, not only has information about calling into the program, and I got to tell you why we'd want you to call in the first place. If you would like to call into the program, telephone lines are open 828-398-4886. Again, that number, 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach us by contacting Skype ID. Guess what? Graylian Report. You can send us emails anytime, info@graylianreport.com. And finally, you can also send us a text message anytime during the program at 828-367-7201. Again, that number, 828-367-7201. Now, that won't connect you with the program, but you can send text messages via your SMS mobile devices to that number anytime. We'll look forward to hearing from you with your New Year's resolutions. If we're going to kick off 2012 with a bang, we want to hear from folks and hear what their New Year's resolutions may be. And, of course, you know, I have a few New Year's resolutions of my own. One of them is really to try and make this Paradigm Symposium absolutely all that it can be. But something else, too, is that I've got about three different books that I'm working on right now. Okay, well, two of them I'm actually underway working on, and then the other's kind of a gleam in the back of my eye, but it's going to be coming together soon. I've mentioned what one of these books is going to have to do with, but the other one, I'll go ahead and tell you because this is very relevant to what we're going to be doing here on the program in the next couple of weeks. The next book is kind of a dark and sordid tale about ghosts and mystery, specifically pertaining to a haunted mansion. And this haunted mansion exists right here in Western North Carolina. In fact, we're going to be doing a live broadcast 1 week from tonight, live from this location. It's the Reynolds Mansion here. It's a bed and breakfast in Western North Carolina. But I tell you, it is truly one of the most intriguing and alluring buildings I've ever been to in all my days. And it's so interesting. And yes, it is purported to be haunted. I've found it so interesting that literally I am working on a written work that will detail some of the history and, of course, the great mysteries associated with this illustrious location. It's fascinating. And Chris and I, of course, you know, we've been up there a few times. We've been taking some photographs and all kinds of notes because he's helping out with this project a bit. And, you know, we just thought, you know, this is such an interesting place. I think that really to fulfill the vibe, what we've got to do is we've got to do a live broadcast. And so the owners were fine with that. We're actually going to be lugging up all our remote equipment and taking it to the Reynolds Mansion. It's probably going to snow for all we know, and we're going to get snowed in a haunted three-story 1847 bed and breakfast and do a live remote broadcast from that location. So it should be pretty interesting. Gosh, maybe if I could get one of our psychics to participate in this, one of our psychic friends, that would be interesting. Of course, Chris, I think you're probably about as psychic as anyone I know.
Well, sure.
That's not saying a whole lot, is it?
I was gonna say we could just call Anya.
We could call Anya. You know, I wish Anya could, you know, and Anya Briggs, of course, is our New York field correspondent. I wish Anya was a little closer sometimes. Now, I do know some psychics who are closer to this area, but I'll just be honest with you. I don't discount or discredit the notion of psychic abilities, but, you know, you have to really impress me before I will, you know, take your gift of intuition seriously. Anya has my seal of approval. And I know of a few others, and there are a lot more out there that really have not ever impressed me. You know, it's kind of a catch. I don't know. It's a mixed bag, I think, is what I'm saying.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we could always call Bob, but considering he's so far away time zone wise.
Well, but Bob Cracknell, he is another one who just, now you talk about someone who's really impressed me. Bob Cracknell is the cream of the crop.
Well, yeah, I'm not discounting that, but he's 7 hours ahead of us.
Yeah, but he's a spunky guy. He's a spunky guy. I think he'd be willing to get up for us. Don't you think? I think he probably would get past the time zone differential. Bob Cracknell's who we're talking about. Robert Cracknell. He's author of the book The Lonely Sense, and I think that there's an electromagnetic field that just moved through the room and passed by your cardioid microphone there, my friend. Did you hear that?
I did. It sounded like cosmic pop.
Now, what's going to be really interesting is if we're doing our broadcast live from the Reynolds Mansion, and if, you know, some people who are interested in ghostly phenomenon will tell you that when there's a purported haunting or a ghost in an area, that they seem to generate a strange kind of, you know, energy field that sometimes can be registered by electromagnetic detection equipment. It's going to be interesting if we're doing this program and suddenly we hear that little crackling noise. What happened was Chris took off his,
a down vest.
Okay, you had a down vest on, yeah. And when you took that off, the static field that was produced by the pieces of fabric rubbing together caused that crackling noise, which interacted with your cardioid microphone there.
Well, I'm just excited about the possibility of, you know, we're doing it live from Reynolds Mansion, but what if we catch an EVP that's only find it on the podcast?
Well, yeah, right.
What if we're talking and, you know, they don't hear anything, but everyone else, when they download it on Wednesday, just hears.
Well, whether or not that's the case, Chris, I think what we will want to look for is probably in truth. Well, here's the interesting thing. A lot of people like to take electromagnetic field detection equipment and even Geiger counters and things like that. And, you know, I know our friend Joshua Warren takes Van de Graaff generators and, oh gosh, what else did he bring into the studio? Not into the studio, but on investigations. You know, I used to work with Josh a lot back in the day. He would bring a multitude of different devices into haunted environments, most of them electrical in nature, with hope of trying to basically document if there were transient static fields and things like that moving through the environment. Now, that said, although I find that interesting, and perhaps for all we know, yes, these strange energies are representative of some kind of a lingering spirit, I've struggled with that for a long time, primarily because of this. Okay, an electromagnetic field meter typically is calibrated to detect energy that is produced by a manufactured source. Okay, for instance, you know, you'll see there's one that's called, you can buy them from Edmunds Scientific. They're called the ELF meter. Another is called the Gauss Master. And these popular electromagnetic field detecting devices are marketed, you know, and sold for purposes of paranormal investigation. But those are calibrated to detect energy fields coming from like a light socket or from, you know, a microwave oven. In fact, a lot of them are designed for detecting electromagnetic leakage, okay, electromagnetic pollution from devices around your home. And several years ago, the notion came to mind somewhere along the way that people were concerned about harmful exposure to EMFs, and they wanted to be able to tell what would be a safe distance for their children to sit, you know, from a, computer screen or from a television screen. And so these devices were designed for people to be able to kind of gauge safely where in your home you could be and where you could operate for long periods of time without harmful exposure to electromagnetic leakage. Now, that said, if you've got these meters that are calibrated to be able to detect energy fields that come from, sources that are manufactured, okay, I think that that, to me, makes them a little bit impractical for use in trying to find something that would be potentially biological or, you know, of course, I don't know that you'd really call a ghost biological either, but we'll say a natural electromagnetic source. And here's the other reason for that, too, is because these meters, although they will detect the kind of fields that are coming from technological equipment, you know, or rather electronic devices and things like that, they'll detect those, but they won't detect the field coming from a human being. So in the absence of a human being there, the idea is that perhaps the soul or something else, some energy that lingers with consciousness, but in the absence of the body, might still also be detectable by one of these devices. But if it's not able to detect a human, when there's a living body there. What in the absence of the living body would cause those devices, calibrated for, you know, electrical equipment and, you know, things around the home, what would cause them to detect something in the absence of a body that would be emanating from a natural source? Okay, that's the first problem. Second problem is some natural EM detectors, like the Trifield Natural Electronic Electromagnetic Field Meter, is actually that particular device is designed entirely for use with geological and natural EM fields and radio and microwave, and it can even pick up body, biofields that are produced by the human body. But again, if indeed a biofield is being produced by a human body, assuming that it is the body, it's the physical body that's actually producing that energy, what in the absence of that body would still be detectable with one of those devices? Now, it very well could be the case that a soul could linger beyond the physical body. It could actually exist apart from it, and that there would actually be an electromagnetic energy presence that is associated with that. But the problem I have with that notion is that while that could be the case, we have no way of proving that. And that is kind of leaping to an unscientific conclusion and then using that conclusion with no kind of verifiable data to back that up to justify the use of these kind of devices in paranormal research. So, to me, the whole use of electromagnetic field detection equipment, while it could prove useful, there's no way that we can calibrate those things because we don't, A, know if the soul exists apart from the body, B, if that soul existing apart from the body actually produces an electromagnetic energy unto itself, and C, we don't have a way that we can measure that and gauge it so that we would know how to use a device in a way that we would be able to determine that if indeed it were happening in a purported haunted environment. So those are some of the problems that I have with using EMF detectors. Now, what's interesting about EVP, which is electronic voice phenomenon, to me is that indeed there are many instances where people have taken typically low quality cardioid microphones. You're actually on a very high quality cardioid broadcast microphone, but the difference between a cardioid microphone and like what I'm talking into a condenser microphone is that that one right there isn't fed phantom power, and it actually has essentially a little magnet in there that works in it through a process of resonance to collect the sound vibrations from your voice and feed those out so that people can actually hear them. And what's interesting is that in many haunted environments, those cardioid microphones tend to resonate with various energy fluctuations and can actually gather sound when there's none apparent to the human ear. There was a really interesting experiment I've talked about before that Joshua Warren used to do where he would disable speakers, okay, from a stereo. And he would run the speaker out cable into a copper coil that used to be in a laboratory, I think back in the 1960s. He bought this thing on eBay, okay? And this copper coil would broadcast in the form of an electromagnetic field emanating from the coil the information that should have been sent to the speakers on this stereo system. And then you'd, of course, be able to hear them and they would become audible to the human ear. Now, when the sound, okay, was being sent to this coil and emanating from the coil in the form of an electromagnetic field, you didn't hear anything, even if you put your ear right up next to it. But what was interesting is you could take a cardioid microphone and hold it up next to the coil, record audio. Again, you wouldn't hear anything while this is going on, but when you played the audio back, you would clearly hear the audio from the stereo system as though it had just been playing and you'd held the microphone right up next to a speaker and recorded it. And what that shows us is that indeed there may be ways that certain energies could carry information, maybe in the form of voices and things like that, that are unintelligible to the human ear, but that nonetheless might be interpreted by certain kinds of electronic equipment like cardioid microphones. So yes, it certainly would be interesting if we visit Reynolds Mansion next week for this kind of a event and we end up finding, well, after we've recorded the podcast, that there is something incredible that we can hear in the background. And the thing is that in truth, in principle, if that is the case, it would be coming through your microphone, and we should actually also be able to hear that live on the air. So we'll want to keep our ears open for that kind of thing. Who knows what strange mysteries may lurk in the mists of the future. That's going to be 1 week from now here on the Graylian Report. When we come back, we'll dig into some more strange stories, weird news, and of course, ongoing updates from Iowa tonight here on the program. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Of Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
From the depths of the hollow earth, bringing you live coverage in Iowa as well as strange news from around the globe. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Mr. Chris Hayes. Now, you know, people are going to start getting worried. Where is the Reverend with the kind eyes?
Well.
Speak up, son. I can't hear you. Put on your radio voice. Where is he?
We'll get to that, all right?
I'm waiting, man.
We'll get to where the Reverend with the kind eyes is.
I understand that you've got a little bit of speculation as to where he is. Should we be worried that he didn't make it tonight? I thought he was supposed to be out there doing live coverage. You know, I thought he was supposed to be our political correspondent, be doing field reporting for us.
Yeah, but that's because we thought the election was today, but it's really only, it's not until Thursday.
Yeah, at least according to one of our field correspondents, right? In other news, Iowa caucus results. Wait a minute. Are we time travelers here? What's going on?
No. They're not real results. Those are pre-results results because the election's on Thursday.
Oh, right, exactly. God, which means Lord. That people who listen to what we're talking about here. Okay. Well, here's what's being reported by CBS News right now. Iowa caucus entrance polls. These are just the entrance polls. Romney, Paul, and Santorum in a three-way race. This is interesting. Doors have closed at caucus precincts across Iowa, and early results from CBS News entrance polls show a three-way race for the Republican presidential nomination among Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, and Rick Santorum, who, of course, surged this past week leading up to the caucus. Entrance polling reveals that Paul's voters are male, younger, and many are first-time caucus goers. Romney's voters are looking for someone who can beat President Obama, while Santorum's voters are looking for a true conservative. Much data has yet to be collected, and those arriving earliest may not reflect the total caucus voters. The precincts closed their doors at 7 p.m. Central Time, leaving Republican voters in the Hawkeye State to be the first to weigh in on this year's presidential contest. Mitt Romney took the lead among the early entrance polls 4 years ago, but finished second in the caucuses to Mike Huckabee, who was then the choice of evangelical conservatives. So we'll see how things come about. In the meantime.
Well, it's 9 o'clock almost Eastern time. So So that would make it 8 o'clock standard time or central time?
Central time, yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay, so we should be getting results really soon, right?
There should be more coming in, yes. And, of course, you know, folks can call in with their feelings about that if you want to interact with us here on the program. Also, New Year's resolutions. God, we haven't talked about New Year's resolutions yet, Chris. What's on the plate for you this year for 2012?
I never make New Year's resolutions because my conviction to keep them is so small. That there's no point. I'd rather know I'm not going to do it than convince myself that I'm going to do it and then be really disappointed when I don't.
You're such a Debbie Downer.
But I'd really, like, really, my goal this year is to GTL as much as possible. Just GTL.
GTL?
GTL.
What is
so much GTL.
What is GTL?
Well,
good time laughing?
No, it's an acronym. You're right. It is. But it stands for gym, tan, and laundry. Because I'm from New Jersey. I'm sorry.
Are you really from New Jersey?
I'm from New Jersey.
You're not from New Hampshire, though.
No.
It's from the caucus state, you know.
No. I'm from the only new state that matters. I'm from New Jersey.
Well, you know, I think that your New Year's resolution there isn't a bad one per se, and I think that the reason why is because, of course, that is sort of something that. You know, has to do with not maybe entirely your health. I mean, you know, tanning in the right circumstances, you know, can be conducive to gathering vitamin D, which the body requires. Of course, if you tan in the less desirable circumstances, it can also contribute to skin cancer and other kinds of problems. So that's not always a good thing.
Oh no, spray tan. Come on.
Spray tanning. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to grow my... Actually, fine. I do have a resolution this year. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Hit me.
By October, by the time we hit Minneapolis, I'm going to have the best blowout and the best fake tan. I'm also planning on buying a brown wool suit and a little gold flyer pin.
Oh, God.
I'm going to be Giorgio Tsoukalos, this paradigm.
I don't doubt
symposium.
It. I don't doubt it in the least. Well, you know, I think that a lot of people, of course, want to maintain good health. You know, like, I'm the kind of guy who never gets sick, okay? I never get sick. Tonight, of course, we've got emergencies here. You know, we're actually drinking Twinings English Breakfast Tea, and that's in addition to the cold and flu pills that I took over there. You know, they're actually the nighttime kind, but they're not the kind that put you to sleep. They're the kind that actually have caffeine in them because, of course, you know, caffeine is conducive to reducing pain and things like that. They got ibuprofen in them also. Because I've had a cold for the last couple of days. I never get sick. Knock on wood. Here I go again. You know, I actually do have a little bit of a cold, and it would have to... What?
Is someone at the door?
No. That was me. I'm knocking on wood, remember?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I've got the attention span of a dog right now.
That's okay. Yeah, because you've been a little sick also. But now listen, I was talking to a friend, okay, one of my research assistants who's working on one of the books with me, and she told me, she says, are you getting sick? You know, a good research assistant... she's actually going to be joining us for the broadcast next week. Oh, you know, she's kind of intuitive. Maybe she would actually work well with this. But anyway, okay. So my research assistant, and it's not Holly, my research assistant was telling me, we were talking on the phone yesterday, and she said, are you getting sick, Micah? And I said, well, no, I think I'm coming down off of a cold, actually. No, unfortunately, I think I rode the crest of the wave into sickness today. And so here we are, like, live on the radio today, and I'm having to try and suppress coughs. Speaking of suppressing coughs, I know you're having a hard time over there, too. So Chris and I are both, it's the season, I guess, of giving, you know, bacteria and germs back and forth. And so she said, you know what you need? You need a neti pot. And I was like, hell no. No, I don't need a neti pot. Let me tell you why.
You've been drug three since 93.
No. Here's the deal. Discover Magazine actually reported this earlier this week. Beware the improperly used neti pot. Now, do you know what a neti pot is, actually? Have you ever seen one of these before, Chris?
Yeah, I've seen them, and I've seen people use them, and it's pretty gross.
It's just a little device that, you know, you can use saline water solution to kind of pour through one nostril, and it comes out the other and kind of clears your nasal passage out and helps you breathe when you're sick.
I can only imagine it would feel like drowning.
Yeah, right. It's equivalent to waterboarding, but it really helps you clean your nasal passage when you're sick.
There we go. Waterboarding's not torture anymore. It's for cleaning out sinuses.
That's right. That's really what it's intended for. So, well, as you may have heard by now, there are two people in Louisiana who have actually died from infections of brain-munching microbes after making a small but very fatal error with their neti pots. while filling their neti pots, devices that send the water, like we said, flowing through your nasal passages to clear them out during a cold, they use tap water instead of distilled or sterilized water like you're supposed to use when you utilize these devices. Well, just their luck, the tap water had a few, we'll always try and pronounce these things. I think people like to listen to the Gralian Report just to hear me mispronounce scientific names of various flora and fauna. This would be the Naegleria fowleri, which is actually a brain-consuming microbe of sorts. Okay, these microbes were contained within the tap water that was used in these neti pots. And soon as the microbes made their way through the nasal passages into the brain, these poor folks had a lot more than a cold to have to worry about. The mortality rate in humans with this particular variety of microbe causes an infection that typically has a 98% chance of death. The tap water is generally safe for most purposes, and drinking a few of these guys isn't a problem since your stomach acids digest these kind of microbes very quickly. According to Jennifer Fraser of the Artful Amoeba, who noted that apparently these things aren't actually amoebas, but they're distant cousins to amoebas. But your deep nasal passages, on the other hand, unlike your stomach, are quite a bit closer to your brain and aren't equipped with such protection, so you've got to be extra careful, all you neti pot users out there. Sometimes the fine print has important information. So if you purchase a neti pot to help combat your sickness and nasal congestion this winter, be well advised, and you heard it here first, folks. Well, actually, you may have heard it first from Discover Magazine, but we're going to tell you regardless. Don't use tap water in those things. Be sure and use only sterilized water or water that comes from, you can purchase distilled water in the store all day long. And, of course, there are various methods involving sterilization of water that would make it safe for use and prevent the introduction of such microbes into one's bodies. Of course, the result could be death, so you don't want to have to try and gamble with that one, I don't think. Well, that wraps up the first hour of tonight's broadcast. We're soldiering on, even though we aren't feeling our very best. Fortunately, there aren't microbes eating our brains yet. If anything's eating your brains, it is probably the craziness that you hear on this program every week. I'm Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South. It is the Gralian Report. We'll be back right after this.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is the Gralian Report with your host, Mike Evans.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the Hollow Earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, I'm Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South, joined in studio by co-host and producer extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Hayes. Welcome to another week of weirdness. Hour two of another week of weirdness, in fact. We're always glad to have you here, listening to us and enduring the pain that I know that so many of you out there have to wrestle with when it comes to understanding elements of our existence from the fringes of insight. And if anything, the kind of news that you hear on this program every week from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time is news from beyond the fringes of insight and insanity. You know, I mentioned earlier during last hour that we had come forth from the abysmal depths of the realm of Lovecraftian elder gods, and that's, in a sense, very true. With great delight, of course, I'm glad to kick off our first broadcast of 2012. Of course, always in good company. And folks, you know, last week was the first program that I've taken personally off. Well, I tell you, the way I feel right now, I could have taken another night off, but we have a strong obligation here at the Graylian Report to provide independent news and analysis, not only regarding current events, but also the strange and unusual, the kind of things that you never do get a chance to really hear a whole lot about elsewhere. We always like to touch on those kind of things here on this program. And for the first time in more than 6 months, that I was not in the studio here in the bunker broadcasting and you know, interacting with folks like yourself, it was kind of tough. I felt kind of out of place, to be honest with you. And, it's not the kind of thing that I want to have to go an entire week without doing. I think I'm going to pull a Rick Perry here and get a little sentimental, actually. You know, Rick Perry teared up today on the campaign trail. I'm sure people are like, oh, God, there he goes again. Do I look like I give a crap what Rick Perry does?
Did he finally remember the third branch of government he was going to get rid of?
Probably not. But anyway. No, I mean, the thing is, though, is that truly, he did actually, you know, all these guys have been tearing up lately. Did you see, okay, Rick Perry teared up talking about the troops today, and then earlier this week, Newt Gingrich was tearing up talking about his mom. You saw that one, too. You know, a lot of people don't even know that GraylianReport.com has a sister site that is devoted only to politics. And, of course, you know, during this election year, most of the information that we would, not feature on this program, and, of course, at the Graylian Report, every now and then, if there's something, you know, that's of importance to this listenership, you know, we'll feature it there. But I think a lot of the political stuff will be filtered over to the sister site. That is Politomatic.com. It's linked to GraylianReport.com. And, of course, during the election year, you'll probably be hearing more about Politomatic. So if you want political news, you can go there for it. And then the Graylian Report will kind of remain, maybe truly fair and balanced. Clear and unbiased, I think, would be a better description, a better pairing of words to describe us, because we certainly like to be clear in the points that we make, and we certainly also try not to be very biased in what we're talking about either. Although I'm sure a lot of people think we are biased toward insanity, biased entirely toward the fringe, toward the weirdness out there. But that's the kind of thing that really makes life, for me, interesting. I think that's the kind of thing that makes life interesting for a lot of us. It makes life a little terrifying at times. And I'll tell you, over the last year, I almost wish that we had a best of reel that we could play right now to highlight some of the scariest stuff that we've had to deal with over the last 6 months, you know. But such is the spice of life. Such is what makes our existence unique. And to ignore it, like most of the mainstream news sources tend to do, well, that's not a whole lot of fun, is it? So we're glad to be able to enjoy ourselves, cut back, cut loose a little bit, and enjoy the weird aspects of life with listeners like you every week here on the program. So that said, welcome back. It is our first official broadcast of 2012. Chris, is the world going to end or what? Are we going to see out the end of the Mayan calendar and all go up in flames?
I don't think it's going to end, no. I think it's, you know,
you're a theologian. Come on.
Not to agree with Giorgio Tsoukalos, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be like Y2K 2.0.
What have you got against Giorgio?
Well,
what's your problem?
I don't have a problem with Giorgio Tsoukalos. Okay. I don't.
Yeah?
I don't have a problem.
Okay. But you like his haircut. I think it's hair envy is what you have. What is that haircut called again?
Well, I don't know if what he's got is a blowout so much as an electrocute, but it most closely resembles a blowout that, okay, you would see on any Juice Head meatball down on the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
Or in Florida, or oddly enough, in Western North Carolina.
Okay, I see. Well, he has an interesting haircut. I like that. I think it's unique, you know. This is coming from a guy who barely anymore has enough hair to warrant, you know, calling what I have a haircut. I don't know if I could get away with calling it that. But now getting back to the end of the world, is the world going to end in 2012? And if not, Chris, tell me why. What's that all about?
Well, I don't think it's going to end in 2012 because, well, worlds don't just spontaneously end. And even with the ever-increasing frequency of natural disasters and horrible things that have been happening, I don't think not even 12 full months is enough ramp-up to cause a world-ending cataclysm.
Well, you know what? George Norrie, when he came on the Grayling Report and talked with us, what he had mentioned specifically was his concern about solar irradiation and the kind of things that NASA and NOAA have been talking about. NASA and NOAA are not biblical names, by the way. We're talking about our space agency and, of course, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, who have, you know, issued over the last year a multitude of concerning statements regarding the behavior of the sun. You know, mass coronal ejections and things like that, have truly presented what could represent a potential for destruction in the coming couple of years. Maybe not so much 2012. I think that right now they're saying that 2013 is a more likely culprit. So it'd be just our luck that the Mayans were off by 1 year. But what, you know, the kind of thing that happens when the sun really starts acting up, okay, and spiking geomagnetic storms here on planet Earth, is that that can entirely disrupt the electrical infrastructure in various parts of the globe. We know that, and of course I've talked about this until I'm blue in the face, but we know that these same sort of effects can be witnessed as a result of the detonation of a nuclear device in near-Earth orbit or in space. And what happens is when you do that, that there's a kind of a resulting shock wave where electrons are propelled downward toward the Earth at such a rate that they could literally disable a lot of electrical infrastructure over major city areas and things like that too quickly. To be prevented by non-hardened infrastructure, which was a process that was being undertaken, I think, back in the 1980s. And now a lot of reports say that, you know, typically, that the sorts of trips that were concerned in terms of warding that kind of thing off might not actually be something where we would entirely have to go through our entire electrical infrastructure and harden it and protect it from the potential surges that could result from this kind of irradiation from the sun or from a potential nuclear weapon, you know, launched into space. But regardless, the electromagnetic pulse question, whether or not it is as dangerous as what people have described, you know, because there are varying studies. Some people have said what I just mentioned, which was that, you know, it was overblown and that, you know, basically measures taken to harden the infrastructure to prevent such cataclysmic and wide-reaching effect. Basically was kind of abandoned because they said, well, it may not be as much a threat as what we thought. But again, there have been a lot of people in the aforementioned agencies, NASA and NOAA, over the last year who have on many occasions said, yes, maybe this is something that we need to take more seriously. Yes, maybe this is something that we need to be very concerned about. Even if the electrical grid wasn't taken out and we weren't left in a veritable dark age, for months or years at a time, at very least we could, you know, be without, you know, power in major metros and things like that for several days at a time. It would be interesting to see, in the complete absence of electricity for only as little as 1 week, what people in a city like New York might do. What might begin to occur in a major metropolitan area? I'll tell you, there are a lot of people who are so devastatingly dependent on technology and the use of electrical appliances that I really think that, you know, so little as 5 or 6 days, maybe 7 days, you know, God help us if it were 2 weeks, I think that there would be a lot of loss of life. You know, I think a lot of people literally would be so dependent on being able to go to the store and get what they need that they wouldn't be able to get food for themselves. You know, it would be a terrifying thing, I think, because the expression, well, you know, people are thrust into danger, disaster, and terror, and they, you know, you sit back and you can watch them eat each other. I don't mean that in the literal sense. I don't think that that expression is intended to be interpreted in that way, but, you know, in Bill Forstchen's book, One Second After, that's just exactly what starts happening, because people basically don't have food. They don't have access to food. What food they do have access to, they're having to ration to such a degree that literally people, I mean, it's a survival of the fittest. And anyone who, you know, first of all, people who are, you know, who haven't had exercise and who haven't, you know, stayed in shape very well, people who aren't able to travel by car or transit and things and are having to walk a whole lot are suffering from the onset of medical side effects from, you know, overexertion. People who are malnourished to begin with, when they are having to ration food, they start to fall, you know, away. People who are in special situations, you know, with rest homes, or if they have, you know, pacemakers or things like that, or if they have to be, if they're being kept on life support, well, they're out too. And in this scenario, although a lot of people dispute the numbers, there is a strong potential for a lot of peril and a lot of death too. So that's something that George Norrie has, you know, mentioned a lot on Coast to Coast AM. I've mentioned it a lot in a number of different forums, and I think that it's probably one of the greatest threats to America, and not just America, but the world in general, especially if this is something that results from solar irradiation and not from the use of nuclear weaponry. But both instances have been shown to have a potential risk in terms of damaging our electrical infrastructure, which has not been hardened entirely in terms of these sorts of things. Chris, I know that you were wanting to jump in on that for a moment.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that especially in terms of, you know, Forstchen's book, it seems like, goodness, that's going around. It seems like we've progressed technologically enough that we're all basically practical skills retarded.
Yeah.
And you said basically that exact same thing, but in a more, you know, verbose and detailed way.
Yes, yeah, so some would say I overtalk it, you know, and a lot of people would tell you I bring up this subject too often. But the thing is I think that it's something that people need to be aware of. I don't mean to be a fear monger, you know. You brought up Y2K earlier, for instance. I don't mean to be someone who looks at, you know, the potential for 2012 and whether it involve, you know, our sun getting angry and blasting us, you know, with you know, coronal mass ejections that, you know, spike geomagnetic storms, and then the geomagnetic storms, you know, destroy the electrical infrastructure, and then we all thrust into the dark ages for a few weeks, and then we all die after we've tried to eat each other. I mean, I'm not trying to present, you know, a grandiose doomsday scenario, especially not in an attempt to cash in on the 2012 fervor, which I think has really died down. And now that we're here in 2012, you know, I think approaching the end of the year, we're going to see, what was the guy, you know, I never remember his name, but the fellow who was the last proponent of one of these alleged doomsday cults that was going on. What was the guy's name, Chris? You remember who I'm talking about?
I mean, there's so many.
Well, the guy last October, though, who was saying that the world was going to end, Harold Camping?
Oh, I don't know. The guy who doesn't matter?
Yeah, I think it was Harold Camping. Anyway, you know, but the thing is
wasn't it his third time saying the world's going to end?
A lot of these guys say, well, you know, and I've heard this.
Well, I did the math wrong in the 80s. It's definitely tomorrow.
It's definitely tomorrow.
Or next week.
And then next week when it doesn't happen, it's, well, but we all died a spiritual death. I mean, I've heard that one so many times, too. But the thing is that I think that toward the end of 2012, we are going to see a lot of that sort of stuff. And that's mostly bunk. I mean, it's entirely bunk, frankly. I don't think that anybody knows when the world's going to end. And then the idea of the world ending, I think that there's a lot of different scenarios that could remove a human life from planet Earth without the world actually ending. But then again, that's just getting down to a matter of semantics. I'm not going to be worried about whether or not the world's going to end. The only thing I'm going to be concerned about toward the end of this year, again, is going to be a particular event that we're going to be putting together. Greatly important, and Intrepid Magazine will be sponsoring the Paradigm Symposium. So we'll keep people up to date on that as more information comes together. We're in the working stages, and we're all very excited about it. But again, there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be laid for that. So that said, this hour we wanted to touch on a few things. We know one of our listeners actually sent this to us. I don't have the email around, but I've got the story here. Sorry, I missed my cough button that time. Broadcast excellence, folks, at its finest. But you know, actually, what this is excellence in broadcasting for the very sole reason that Chris and I are soldiering on despite terrible weather that's going on. I think right now, let's get a temperature update. Where we are in Asheville, North Carolina right now, the temperature outside is 21 degrees. Well, that's not that bad compared to some places around the United States.
But down in the Moho discontinuity, it's a nice and balmy 65.
It is. It's always, all year round. Yes. And why are we not in the Moho tonight? Good question. Wait, are we or are we not? I think that's what we like to leave people guessing. And you know, when I went on Ben and Aaron's podcast, they asked me, they said, how serious are you guys about doing that whole, you know, the bunker thing? I mean, you guys actually broadcast from underground? And I said, well, we've got a lot of different locations we broadcast from. One of them is an office high above Midtown, sunny Asheville, land of the sky, North Carolina. One of them is a bunker, literally, and I have to point this out to everyone I tell, it's a bunker that's literally hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface in the Moho discontinuity. And then I have to explain to people what the Mohorovic discontinuity is. Then there are other locations also. There's the Southern Command, the Northern Command, the Eastern Command, the Western Command, the Lovecraftian Command, and there's hundreds of, what's the one out there in the Pacific Ocean, the oceanic point of what was it?
Are you telling them all of our bases?
Well, they don't know the exact location.
Well, furthest from land and down.
That's
is pretty
one.
Specific.
Furthest from land and down. People might be able to find that one.
It's okay. Try to get there. You'll be, it's guarded.
Let's invite the listeners to see if they can figure out what we mean by furthest from land and down. If you know what the name of that location is, well, you should email us. We'd be interested in seeing if you know sometime throughout the week. You can reach Chris Hayes at producer@graylianreport.com. Of course, I'm info@graylianreport.com. What is furthest from land and down?
Or you can call me. I'll give out my phone number.
I wouldn't
That's
do that.
That's not true. I won't do that.
Chris, why do you always have the sexy voice on? I'm not going to do that.
Because, quite frankly, being sick on top of I smoke far too many cigarettes and drink far too much. When I do drink, it's basically washed my voice in...
I just thought your voice was
sandpaper.
I thought it was naturally always that sexy, though.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, that's right. Hi, this is Chris Hayes. I'm filling in for Mike Angston on the Graylian Report.
And we're going to talk about whatever you want.
Well, when we come back, we will be talking about how some violinists can't tell the difference between old violins and new ones. Why is that of interest to anyone here? Well, it is actually quite unique, and this has to do with... something that we've talked about on the program a good bit in the past as well. We'll touch on that when we come back right after this break. A little news story sent along by one of our fantastic listeners. You can always send us news at either of the aforementioned email addresses. info@graylianreport.com is linked directly at the website, www.graylianreport.com. You'll want to check that out here in a minute, because in the next segment we'll be touching on an interesting story that we've got linked front and center there at the website. You don't want to miss that here on the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
August 15th, my joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd, I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Right now, if you visit drudgereport.com, there's a huge emboldened series of red letters across the top of the page, and they read Ron 24, Rick 23, Mitt 23, Newt 13. So apparently Rick Santorum, not Rick Perry. Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney tied at 23%, Newt Gingrich falling behind at 13%, and Ron Paul taking the lead at 24% thus far in Iowa. In other news, however, this one's interesting. This one has a little bit to do with the... the coming election. Okay, first of all, hold on. We teased something during the last segment that I wanted to touch on. We'll come back to this next story here in just a moment. First, I did want to get to this story. I found this interesting, and I told you about it before we went on the air tonight, Mr. Hayes, about how violinists can't tell the difference between a Stradivarius violin and a new one. Now, if you don't know what a Stradivarius violin is, you know, I studied classical violin myself for 6 years. A Stradivarius is, of course, a very famous antique Italian-made violin crafted by Antonio Stradivari. And these literally can sometimes sell for millions of dollars per violin because they're reported to have some of the finest tone of any violin on earth. But what's interesting is that a recent study, okay, involving a double-blind test resulted in some rather shocking, this is very interesting, some rather shocking results. Ever since the early 19th century, many tests have questioned the alleged superiority of these old Stradivarius violins. Time and time again, listeners have failed to distinguish between the sound of the old and the new instruments, but critics have been quick to pick holes in these studies. In most cases, the listeners weren't experts, and the players and researchers knew which violin was which, a flaw that could have biased the results. And what's more, no one has tested whether violinists themselves can truly pick up on supposedly distinctive sounds that a Strad is known to give. The common wisdom is that they can, but Fritz and Curtin, okay, these are a couple of researchers involved in this present study, Claudia Fritz and Joseph Curtin. Fritz and Curtin showed that this actually isn't true. During the 8th International Violin Competition of Indianapolis, one of the largest and most important competitions in the world involving the instruments, Fritz and Curtin persuaded 6 violinists to part with their instruments. 3 of the violins were new that were using this test, and one was made only a few days before the administration of the test. The other 3 had illustrious centuries-long histories. 2 were made by Stradivari, and the other by a maker named Guarneri. One of the Stradivari, denoted O1, currently belongs to an institution and is loaned to only the most gifted players in the world. All 3 have been featured in concerts and recordings bowed by famous violinists. Their combined value is around $10 million total, 100 times more than the 3 new ones. Can you believe that? $10 million is the combined wealth that could be garnered from these various violins that were used in this study. That's a good bit of bank right there. So essentially, the test was a true double-blind. Neither the players nor the people who gave them the violins had any way of knowing which instrument was which. The room was dimly lit. The players were wearing goggles so they couldn't see properly. The instruments had dabs of perfume that were even added to the chin rests that blocked out any distinctive smells that the players might have been able to use to determine the age or the origin of the instruments. And even though Fritz and Curtin knew which the identities of the 6 violins were, they only passed the instruments to the players via other researchers who were then hidden by screens wearing their own goggles and quite literally in the dark. Now get this. First, the players were given random pairs of violins. They played each instrument for a minute only and said which they preferred. Unbeknownst to them, though, each pair contained an old violin and a new one. For the most part, there was nothing to separate the two, and the players preferred the new instrument as often as the old one. But there was one exception. The Stradivarius, the one with the most illustrious history, the most famous Italian-made violin, was chosen far less often than any of the other 3 violins. And the tests went on. They saw all 6 violins laid out in random order on a bed, and finally, at this point, were given 20 minutes to play any violin against any other and choose the one that they would like most to take home. Here again, they picked the best and worst instruments in terms of 4 qualities: the range of tone colors, projection of the instrument, the instrument's general playability, and then its response to the player. This time a clear favorite emerged among the violins. The players chose one of the new violins, dubbed N2, as their take-home instrument most often, and it topped the rankings for all 4 qualities. As before, O1, the Stradivarius, received the most severe rejections. Overall, just 38% of the players chose to take an old violin home, and most couldn't tell if their instrument was old or new to begin with. As Fritz and Curtin write, this stands as a bracing counterexample to conventional wisdom. I think that that's just incredibly interesting that for years and years, these instruments have been hallowed and revered for their playability and their tone. And then finally, a serious study that is designed with careful and meticulous rigor to be able to ascertain what people's real feelings are based solely on the tone and the playability of a violin and not any preconceptions they might have. And these Stradivarius instruments, these famous violins, Italian-made violins that sometimes sell for millions of dollars, well, they just aren't found to sound quite so good after all, are they? That's quite interesting, quite revealing indeed. I think that there are going to be a lot of revelations that come out throughout the course of this evening. And another one, this is a really strange one that came up. I feel bad for this individual. I don't remember where I came across this story. The story appears at writestuff.com. That's Wright spelled W-R-Y-T-E. The story is titled, Don't Trust New Age Psychics, A New Year's Resolution. Now, we're talking about New Year's resolutions tonight, it being the first broadcast of 2012. And this is an unusual New Year's resolution. It actually comes more in the form of a warning, as written by Paul Schroeder for WriteStuff.com. He said, at one time, in order to block untoward psychic experiences, knowing that some medications did change brain chemistry to the extent as to simply put one beyond the reach of such creatures, I tried antihistamines and did indeed manage to stop it all temporarily. I had read that on the internet and, just wanting to feel normal again, tried it on myself. I don't know how it works, but it works temporarily. But one can't live on Benadryl. That's an interesting introduction for what he's talking about here. But he goes on to say, essentially, that he was going to go through a blessing and that he had appeared to, long story short here, had decided to try a lot of different kinds of things that would try and basically heal some debilitating illness that he had begun to suffer. Okay? He says, I deduce that rather than it having a rarefied... that's not what I'm looking for. He says, entities which he believes can affect the body refuse rescue and delight in tormenting humans. Nothing else except unholy ones could do such violence within one's actual dreams. Now, he says, I'm naturally cynical about any New Age psychic these days, and for a solid good reason, and thus elucidates why he thinks that in 2012 you should avoid them altogether. Here's his story. He says, 15 years ago on a Thursday night at bedtime, I was meditating on angels and protective prayers right before I went to sleep. I tried a creative, self-healing metaphysical technique I learned from someone that I then admired, Sylvia Brown. Sylvia Brown, of course, is a well-known psychic. After many abductions, he's referring to alien abductions, he said, I suddenly suffered from enigmatic, diagnosed degenerative spinal disease of my neck's 7 discs. Chronic back pain would be alleviated, psychic Sylvia Brown assured me, if I followed her directions for creating a healing room, where healing spirits could enter a comfortable, ornate room within which a spiritual healer could enter and heal the human body. And this room, of course, I guess, is in the ethereal sense. She had me carefully create a mental construct of such a quote-unquote room with a healing table in the center, which was surrounded by comforts, technology, decor, and objects that I might ever crave. I was assured by her that healing would be easier if I asked for healing for only one part of my body, and she told me not to be afraid of the healer when I was approached, as the healer would be from God. Now, of course, they're talking about an individual, that comes into this healing room in this metaphysical construct of the psyche. So anyway, the idea was that if I took time in fine detail to build it, a healer would come. Kind of, like in Field of Dreams, remember?
Oh, goodness.
So, there were other metaphysical preparations involving washing and imbuing myself with different colors. It was, she said, involving metaphysics. But sadly, results were instant, nightmarish, and horrid rather than healing. I awoke. This is the first experience he has in the healing room. I awoke in sleep to find myself floating amongst small medical gray aliens aboard a craft in a small white medical room. In the center of a circular room was a gray alien doctor in whites and a gray attending nurse also in whites. I presume this means white clothing. Absorbed in reading a chart on a clipboard. Now, at first, these entities were unaware of my presence. Then he said, one of the grays turned, and without saying a word, he said, oh, so you want your back healed, do you? He growled in rage and in a flash was on top of me, traversing the room in quick jumps like a jumping spider. I relaxed, expecting healing, but as he lay on top of me, he squeezed my spine very hard, hurting me. I awoke in bed, my physical body in sudden severe pain, hollering. I've been crippled since that time, with all of my spinal discs save one herniated. I've been hobbled, unable to move without assistance since that moment. That's a terrible story. Now, my question is this. Can we truly blame New Age psychics or those purporting to have metaphysical ways that one can heal themselves? What was the nature of this man's experience? What led, and was this a psychological construct that he built to, in a strange way, cope with the debilitating situation that set in with his physical body? Or is this a situation where this individual literally suffered some sort of malevolent influence from beyond? Is it possible that such things can happen? It reminds me a little bit of some of the participants during Rick Strassman's DMT studies back in the 1990s. Many people had interesting experiences, but some people had downright terrifying experiences. I remember one man claiming he was sexually assaulted by alligators. You know, a lot of other people were discussing, vivid encounters with clowns and creatures and things like that. You know, not the kind of thing that I would hope to have happen in a healing session. Chris, what about you?
I never want to be assaulted sexually by an alligator. I'm sorry.
well, most of us don't.
I mean, just the idea of having a healer of any type that, you know, isn't a medical professional is asinine and insane to me.
It's a pretty strange circumstance. And again, you know, this man certainly seemed to feel that it was a dangerous circumstance. I think that new UFO Digest carried the story as well. But that said, speaking of magical influences and things like that, have you seen this one that a Mexican grand warlock has predicted that Obama will lose in 2012? Have you seen it? It's true. Yes, Mexico's grand warlock predicted U.S. President Barack Obama would fail to win re-election and two more Latin American leaders would be diagnosed with cancer in a traditional New Year's forecast on Tuesday. The grand warlock, or Brujo Mayor in Spanish, leads a Mexican tradition of brujeria, or sorcery, centered in the southeastern city of Catemaco. The grand warlock, also known as Antonio Vasquez, said that Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who claims to have beaten an unspecified cancer, would have a terrible relapse. Argentina's President Cristina Kirchner, Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff, and former Brazilian leader Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and Paraguay's Fernando Lugo have been diagnosed with cancer in recent years. Chavez suggested last month that the spate of cancer among leftist leaders would be a U.S. plot. Vasquez, who sports a long gray beard, put the cancer cases down to witchcraft against Latin American leaders during a Mexico City news conference giving his 25th annual predictions.
Clearly.
Mexico's Institutional Revolutionary Party, which ruled for more than 70 years to 2000, the year 2000 that is, would return to power with its candidate Enrique Peña Nieto winning the presidency in July, according to Vasquez, who based his predictions on tarot card readings and observations of the stars. Vasquez, who claims to have a 75-80% accuracy rate, last year said that the euro would weaken and recession would return to developed economies, but he also predicted incorrectly that a Latin American leader would be assassinated. That did not end up being the case. But he certainly seems to believe that Obama will not be reelected in 2012. It's very interesting. Can we trust the grand Mexican warlock any more than we can, well, a New Age healer? That's the question.
Speaking of Prez Obama not being elected in 2012, have I discussed on air my real and true 2012 end of the world theory?
No, I would like for you to, though. I'm very interested in hearing this.
Well, how about I discuss it with you on the break to make sure it's appropriate for air, and then if it's appropriate for air, I'll tell you wonderful folks in Radioland.
Well, okay, our producer, okay, even though he's the boss, he's the guy who's supposed to know what FCC regulations...
Hey, we're not bound by the FCC codes, but we're bound by our own stringent moral codes, and you know what I feel is okay isn't always what you feel okay. It's called compromise, Michael.
Yes, that's right.
And that's why we as a team, a duo, work so well together.
As a duo, yes indeed. Why does that sound weird to me? Are we missing something here? Oh, I know what we're missing. No, we are missing something. We're not gonna have a top 10 because the Reverend's not here tonight.
Oh no, I've got a top 10. We're good.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
We've got a top 10?
We've got a top 10.
We've got all the bases covered then.
Well, and I didn't find it 2 minutes before I needed to have it.
Oh, okay. Good job. Well, I'm fantastically thrilled that we do have a top 10 for tonight. But that'll be during the third hour. If you want to hear what, I guess Chris Hayes' crazy top 10 will be tonight, you're going to have to stick around to the end of the program. And in the meantime, we'll be coming back right after this, perhaps with a cataclysmic revelation from our producer and tonight also our engineer, Mr. Chris Hayes, right here on the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. We'll be back right after this.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out. And keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Havkin.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
And live via Canada, our foreign affairs field correspondent, Mr. Christopher McCollum, has said, Ron Paul, two words. Right now, the Des Moines Register is reporting 24.1% for Ron Paul, putting him in the lead with Rick Santorum behind, still 23.8%, and Romney following in third place now at 22.8%, with a total of 2,520 votes. So it is indeed looking more and more like tonight's race very likely will go to Ron Paul. 24.1 versus Rick Santorum's 23.8 may not sound like a lot. They are neck and neck, certainly. The 24.1 that separates Paul from Romney at 22.8 is, in fact, rather significant, on the other hand, statistically, and that is pretty remarkable, even more so when we consider the fact that Gingrich, who had been previously considered the front runner after going out on television and saying, I'm going to be the nominee and all this stuff, he's fallen behind to 13.3%. Rick Perry at 9%, Michelle Bachmann at 6.1%, and John Huntsman, the poor guy with a lot of good ideas who can't seem to get a break, at 0.6% with only 61 votes. There are also other votes that were cast, people with no preference who constitute 0.2%. 0.1% also goes to Other and Herman Cain, who suspended his campaign just late last year after allegations of misconduct and infidelity. So that is how things stand right now. More updates throughout the hour and into the final hour of the program. Who knows, we may have something conclusive before it's all said and done later this evening. And yet, strangely, I'm noticing that the web is not really quiet, so to speak, but I would say that there's less information, there's less fervor surrounding this than what I personally expected to see. Maybe the reason for that is, or has more to do with the simple fact that people are just tired of hearing of it, you know? They're tired of hearing about what's going on in politics right now. You know, here in a few months, things might heat up, but right now, I think that the rather inconsequential nature of the Iowa caucus probably is hitting home with people, and they're, you know, really, well, maybe not Iowans, but it's certainly the case with others around the country, and they're kind of like, you know what, ask me again in a couple of months. So, but you'll have to hear from us again here in just a little while. We'll continue to give updates about the ongoing results in Iowa right now. Not again. You know, last year, around New Year, I was actually broadcasting on a station out of Norman, Oklahoma, DCIX.FM, and doing a slightly different program from this one. And this was a hot story this time last year. I'm a little shocked and unnerved that yet again, 1 year later, here we are, we're celebrating the New Year, and yet again, thousands of blackbirds have fallen dead in an Arkansas area suburb on New Year's Eve. And this is, again, this is very disturbing. They say that they know why this happened. Thousands of blackbirds dropped dead on New Year's Eve in Arkansas in an incident eerily similar to one that occurred at the same time about a year ago. The disturbing deaths in Beebe, a city northwest of Little Rock, were sparked after loud fireworks sent flocks of the small birds into a panic, scientists said. This caused them to collide with each other, as well as power lines, houses, and cars. Officer John Weeks said the first reports of birds on the streets came around 7 p.m. as residents celebrated the year's end with fireworks in their neighborhoods, according to an Associated Press report. Police worked with animal control workers to locate and clean up the birds' bodies. Now, on New Year's Eve 2010, an estimated 3,000 to 5,000 birds died from what was described as blunt trauma after they were similarly spooked by what was believed to be the launch of fireworks. Eyewitnesses told authorities the birds were hitting mailboxes, cars, basketball goals, houses, trees, and other objects. This according to Keith Stevens of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, who told the Daily News last January, "The trauma shows that they were in flight when they collided with something that killed them." The bird deaths, which were followed only days later by hundreds of more bird deaths in Louisiana, sparked conspiracy theories ranging from the biblical end of the world to government cover-ups. A lot of people, I'm sure, are convinced that it's actually HAARP that's responsible for this. But it is, isn't it?
Yes, yes, clearly. I mean, and it's also fulfilling signs of the biblical end of days.
Yes, indeed. Well, but no, that's December 21st.
No, Micah.
We're getting an early start, huh?
I'm sorry. The Mayans think it's going to end in December. With the biblical end of days, the biblical apocalypse, that could come at any time. It could have come, you know, 6 months ago. It could have come at the beginning of the millennium. It could come tomorrow. Like, that's the beauty of the biblical end of days. There's no timeline. It could happen. So when it does happen, someone could just be like, told you.
Well, but you know, I mean, almost anything could happen at this point. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, not so much, again, I think, what's actually going to happen around December of 2012, but I think it's going to be interesting to see the way that people begin to react. I hope there's not mass hysteria, mass silliness that ensues following all that. But anyway, that said, I thought it was kind of strange, if not tragic, and of course, obviously synchronistic, that yet again, all these birds, the bird that appears is a red-winged blackbird, just like last year. The little guy's lying there on the ground, and he seems to have suffered some sort of blunt force trauma. But many of the bird deaths that were occurring around this time last year, they didn't involve fireworks that I know of. In fact, one of the suspected causes of their death was hypoxia, which is believed to have been, you know, resulted from these birds becoming disoriented and flying very quickly to an altitude, a very high altitude, that caused the onset of basically a lack of or a loss of oxygen. And this causes kind of a bluish spattering around the beak. And they said that some of these birds were found to display signs of this condition, hypoxia, when they were discovered dead. But again, you know, that didn't seem to coincide, to my knowledge, with the launch of fireworks, like what has occurred here in this area of Arkansas. And then there were the fish. There were the fish that were washing up dead on the shores of beaches and things like this. I think that the common thread between a lot of these animals, birds, fish, and several other animals, is that they all tend to, what were you going to say? Go ahead, preempt me here.
They all explode when you give them Alka-Seltzer?
No, they don't all explode. No, they all utilize basically a directional sense, a magnetic directional sense that probably could be affected by, you guessed it, solar flares and solar irradiation.
Yeah. Yes. Or even, you know, even the fireworks, maybe not the light or anything, but the concussive blasts that come, what is that called? The shockwave that emanates from these, you know, colorful but incredibly powerful explosions in the sky.
Yes, but again, I how does that affect fish, though? And maybe it does, I don't know. But, you know, there were fish this time of the year last year, in conjunction with these reports of bird deaths, and the fish were washing up on beaches and things like that as a result of something going on. There were a number of other kind of animals also, and this happened in a lot of different locations around the globe. It wasn't just a localized phenomenon. So, who knows? But that doesn't seem to be the case this year. Nonetheless, it seems a bit synchronistic that one year later, following all those strange animal deaths, and in BB, Arkansas, whether or not it was the likely or even obvious result of fireworks, this did indeed happen again with red-winged blackbirds. Very strange indeed. Visit GraylianReport.com. I've got to point this out there. There's a really interesting story that we've got linked there at the website. And there's actually a link to a video as well. The story that we're talking about, it's front and center out there at the website. And for those of you downloading the podcast, it's going to be the second story, so you'll have to scroll down just a little bit. It's titled, Amazing Manimal, Bonobo with Brains Has a Penchant for Pan Frying. Now, for many, Iowa tonight is heating up to be a prime indicator of how the political field is about to turn in 2012. But for one researcher in the Iowa area, there's another fascinating story involving heat that may lend itself to rethinking the intelligence of some of our cousins in the animal kingdom. This story has to do with a pygmy chimpanzee, a bonobo named Kanzi, who has a passion for, get this, building fires and cooking food. Now, it was said that this little fella, when he was much younger, had a particular fascination with a documentary that was about mankind's, quest for fire. In fact, I think that may have even been the name of the documentary in question. This little guy was said to have watched this many, many times. And after watching this program about mankind's quest for harnessing the power of fire in ancient times, he began to watch people when they would take him out, and he would watch them build fires. And according to the researchers involved in this study, Kanzi never was shown or taught how to build a fire. He was allowed to do it after observing others doing it. He was allowed to do it. They said it took him forever to learn how to hold a lighter the right way. But there's a video. We've got it linked at GraylianReport.com. This little guy has not only learned how to build a fire, but he'll set up a little stove and he'll pan fry food and he'll roast marshmallows. And then he'll take water and he'll pour it on top of the fire and put out the fire before he leaves. So the interesting question that people are asking about this, you know, we've seen in recent years, first it was believed that chimpanzees weren't able to swim. Well, in some locations, especially in remote areas where it's, again, you know, kind of a biological necessity to sustain themselves, chimpanzees have indeed been seen swimming in the wild. Some chimpanzees have also been observed in the wild utilizing sticks and other things like that as weapons and crude tools. And now we've got this little guy, Kanzi, who isn't able to do it using natural supplements, or supplemental equipment that we'd find. He doesn't rub sticks together or anything like that. But this little guy can use a match, and he can build a fire, and he can cook food, and then he pours water on the fire. So the question is, granted, barring the fact that he has to have certain equipment that is man-made, manufactured equipment, tools, to be able to accomplish what he's accomplishing, the question nonetheless remains, if he were taught a way to do this, and he were taught a way to do it using all natural equipment, what would Kanzi be able to do if he were released into the wild? And furthermore, if he were able to find a way to build a fire in the wild, would it have incredible dangerous potential, and widespread destruction involved? Would he set fire to his landscape and burn himself to death? Or would he teach others responsible ways to build fires and to cook food and to do things like this? And would he pass that trait along to others? At some point in history, if indeed humankind has evolved, in all likelihood, our ancestors went through this same sort of circumstance as well, this same sort of learning process. Trial and error, and perhaps probably more than decades, generation after generation probably attempting to learn to harness the energy of fire. I'm sure that at various times, individuals in certain locales learned how to do it and then, of course, lost the essence of the mystery, but picked it up again elsewhere, and then finally, eventually, it became kind of a cultural staple. It was passed along to others. Others learned to do it, and then we kept it, and it actually formed one of the basic rudiments of our culture. The invention of things like wheels and, of course, weapons, clothing that allows us to move about and populate areas that beforehand might have been previously uninhabitable due to colder temperatures. And fire, of course, helps with that just as well, warming ourselves in addition to cooking food. So there are a lot of questions that come to mind when we look at this video. Again, we've got that linked at GraylianReport.com. Kanzi Cookout, a bonobo with a passion for the blaze. He's quite an interesting little guy. I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. And you're always welcome to leave a comment or two right there at the bottom of the article. I can see our good friend and loyal listener, Mr. Red Pill Junkie, has included a couple of comments about Kanzi the pan-frying bonobo. And I asked in the article that we've got up, I said, the implications are indeed startling, and they offer us a unique glimpse at how our ancient ancestors may have begun to harness the heat of flame for the first time. But this, of course, interesting to those of the Fortean persuasion for slightly different reasons. It also evokes in our minds notions of creatures similar to humans that may be capable of such feats of intelligence. And while the immediate idea of a creature similar to a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot, the purported legendary beast said to roam the wilds of America and the like, while notions of a Sasquatch may come to mind, it also brings to mind questions about proposed humanzies, that is, human-ape hybrids, which are the hypothetical genetic hybrids that would result from experimentation, genetic manipulation involving the DNA of humans and chimpanzees. Some actually assert that this has not only been attempted, but maybe even successfully produced in the past, that there have actually been instances where humanzee hybrids have been produced. I wonder what the likelihood of that kind of thing is.
I don't know, but if it is possible to hybridize man with great ape, I would much prefer for there to be a humanitan than a humanzee.
What was a humanitan?
A human and an orangutan.
Humanitan. Well, who knows?
Because no one wants a humrilla.
Humrilla, well.
Or a gorman.
But I think that the closest genetic cousins are actually the chimpanzees. So I don't know if a humanitan or a humilla would actually be possible. But a humanzee or maybe a chuman. I don't know. Anyway, well, that's going to be the last word this hour. When we come back, ongoing updates about Iowa and also strange news from around the world. It is your very favorite weekly hub for the weird and wonderful. It's the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this.
Hey parents, introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have sent children into fits of rage.
I am responsible for a child's speech impediment.
I am the reason a child can't read.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
All right, guys, I know you've been putting it off. Your thirst for knowledge is incredible, insatiable, but your wallet says otherwise. So you haven't been able to subscribe to all those classy magazines out there bringing you to the edges of the fringe just like you and I do every week here on the Graylian Report. Well, good news for you. You can now subscribe to Intrepid Magazine for an entire year and just pay $19.95. Really? That's it? It's no joke. $19.95 will get you an entire year of incredible insight from authors like Nick Redfern, Scotty Roberts, and of course yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Visit www.intrepidmag.com today and feel your mind expanding tomorrow.
Exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Mike Adams.
Broadcasting live from the Moho Discontinuity and keeping you company every Tuesday night from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Welcome back to the program. It is the Graylian Report. I'm the host with the ghost, Mr. Micah Hanks. Well, I will be next week when we're doing our live broadcast from a haunted mansion here in Western North Carolina. You don't want to miss that. We'll be broadcasting live from Reynolds Mansion. It's going to be a fantastic experience, and hopefully we'll be having, well, some spiritual superlatives joining us live on the airwaves for that event. I know it's a little late for a Halloween-style broadcast, but hey, hopefully it'll be something that you guys will enjoy regardless. That's next week, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Graylian Report. You don't want to miss that. Who knows what's going to happen? And, of course, everything will be live and unrehearsed. So if all hell breaks loose and aliens drop down and try and abduct us, and, of course, there are ghosts that are accosting us there in this ancient tome of weirdness.
Then we're doing our jobs.
Then we're doing our jobs well, exactly, yes. That's exactly what we're hoping to do. But welcome back to the program, my friends. And I do want to draw your attention to a few things. You know, if you visit graylianreport.com, while you're visiting the site and looking at that little article that we did about the amazing manimal bonobo with his penchant for pan frying, the little guy named Kanzi, if you scroll on down the page, you'll also see that I've got an ad, a banner linked for Exposed, Uncovered, and Declassified Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past. This is the latest anthology put up by New Page Books, edited by Michael Pye and Kirsten Daly. Of course, I'm a contributor to this. I've got an article about Oppenheimer's Iron Thunderbolt. It's quite controversial. We've discussed that subject matter a good bit here on the program. I've been duly criticized for talking about what many perceive to be the assertion that there were ancient nuclear weapons that existed in ancient times. And while a lot of people have asserted that kind of thing, and there's some compelling evidence for nuclear events, again, I like to point out, I refer to these as nuclear events. I don't know what the cause behind them may indeed be, but whatever it is, it is certainly an ancient mystery that is very interesting. And I'm not the only contributor. Nick Redfern, Thomas G. Brophy, Eric Von Daniken, Philip Coppins. You know, there are a lot of folks who are involved in this. Of course, my very dear friend Marie D. Jones and her associate Larry Flaxman also contributed a essay for this, as well as Paul Von Ward and several others. So you can check that out in bookstores everywhere. All you have to do is go to Barnes & Noble, You can even get it on Amazon.com, and you'll find Lost Civilizations and Secrets of the Past in the Exposed, Uncovered, and Declassified series. You can find it just about any place you need to. And of course, it comes highly recommended by the wonderful staff here at Graylian Report. You know, I tell you, that's the wonderful thing about being sick when you're trying to do a radio program, is that no matter how well you try and articulate things, you're always going to have some problem. And somebody's going to come into the program and start listening, you know, halfway through the show. They're going to hear me talking about all this, and they're going to hear my slightly giddy due to having taken all kinds of vitamins and things, and we're drinking tea right now, and we've been taking emergencies, and, oh, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know. See, there I go again. I didn't even bother trying to hit the cough button that time. You know, somebody's going to walk in the middle of this, and they're going to hear me trying to pronunciate something. Pronounce for all you laymen out there. And they're just going to break out laughing because it's going to sound like I've, finally lost control of my tongue or something like that. So, you know, don't lose the faith. Promise I'll sound better next week. Right now I understand we actually have some live updates with regard to the caucus coming out of Des Moines.
Other states. Now,
let's
right
listen
now,
in
as
for
I
a
said,
moment.
Newt Gingrich is expected to arrive around 9:45, where he will address supporters. He's already, as I said, looking ahead to New Hampshire and maintaining that fourth place finish, holding off Rick Perry, which is very important to his campaign.
Okay, thank you very much, Sonia, and that would be critical. I mean, that's a big fight there between Gingrich and Perry.
Right now we are hearing from 30.9% of precincts reporting. It is caucus night in Iowa. We're looking right now at some slightly different numbers as more reports are coming in. Ron Paul, who had been filling out the lead, has now dropped back to 22.8%, putting him in third place. And now there's a very close tie between Romney and Rick Santorum. Santorum with 7,726 votes at 23.0%, and Romney taking the lead with 7,844 votes, giving him 23.4% of the vote. Romney, the expected 2012 front runner, may indeed come clean in Iowa tonight. After all, we'll have more as that develops, but then again, we have 30.9% of precincts reporting, and there's plenty more information to come. We'll keep you updated. You know, there's an interesting thing that I came across. We'll have this linked in the show notes for tonight's program, that many people have said that could actually be a deciding factor in changing the outcome of the 2012 presidential contest. But it's probably not what you think. I found this very interesting. According to the website rollcall.com, the newspaper of Capitol Hill since 1955, advocating the gold standard could change the outcome of the 2012 presidential contest. Now, of course, for listeners of paranormal programs, we're not talking about the Paracast, of course, you know, the gold standard of paranormal radio. Now, we're talking about the gold standard as once implemented here in the United States, where our monetary policy was actually backed by some kind of tangible wealth. Scott Rasmussen in October polled 1,000 voters on gold and found it popular, especially if characterized as a way to constrain big government and big banks. That should appeal to everybody, right? And no, this isn't going to be a endorsement for a company that's trying to sell you gold like you hear on all the talk radio programs. No, in November, American Principles in Action commissioned the polling company to drill deeper into the implications of the early contests in Iowa, going on right now, as well as upcoming New Hampshire and South Carolina. The polling company found that advocating the gold standard would move votes where they most matter. The gold standard is highly popular with Tea Party voters, movement conservatives, and other disproportionately likely to attend the Iowa caucuses or vote in the New Hampshire and South Carolina primaries. In other words, restoring the gold standard, the classic American monetary policy destroyed by Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, turns out to be a potential sleeper issue and an underexploited one. It could tip the scales of this race. And yet, strangely, across the Great Pond, you know, our friends at the Daily Grail linked another story today that seems to be kind of a diametric opposite. You know, people are talking about the gold standard being a potential sleeper issue in the United States, while elsewhere, Wired Magazine reported recently that the dream of a universal currency just won't die. I mean, we've seen the Eurozone maelstrom, and it refuses to end, according to Wired blogger David Woolman. Thanks to the debt crisis, some Greek officials are contemplating dumping the common currency for the drachma, Meanwhile, Italy and Spain teeter. A decade after the shared currency was heralded as a 21st century tool for peace and prosperity, it turns out that currency unions, well, aren't such a hot idea. Not so fast, though. This is an undeniably terrible period of epic turmoil, and many economists will tell you that sovereign states need sovereign currencies, full stop. But this notion ignores a fundamental truth, that countries with their own currency may have monetary independence, but in reality, as gun battles in Libya, CDOs in the U.S., and tsunamis in Japan have taught us, we're only becoming more economically intertwined, regardless of what our coins may look like. Step back from the current crisis to consider the long view in currency unions, or even a single global currency, and they have a fair share of appeal, according to this Wired article. A universal medium of exchange could eliminate currency risk and jack up trade. It would mean speculators couldn't short an individual country's currency. Exporters wouldn't have to fret over the gap between a price on a contract and the value of the payment. A single currency could halt spastic swings in prices and end conversion fees, leaving more of the pie for little stuff like R&D and employees' health insurance. Oh, and it could put an end to intentional disputes over currency manipulation. Hello, China? Of course, this has been a problem. The U.S. is often operated as a currency manipulator, and now, of course, we're not happy because China has jumped into that game in recent years as well. But I'll tell you, in my personal opinion, the implementation of a universal currency would be a mixed bag just as well. Just as well, perhaps, as reinstating the gold standard. I don't think either could be anything that could take place with effectiveness overnight. I do think that if in the United States in the question of the gold standard there were to be a question, which I would advocate infinitely greater than the notion of a kind of universal currency, I think that it would also have to occur in conjunction with probably the deconstruction and if not the outright removal of the Federal Reserve Bank here in the United States, which, in my opinion, has contributed greatly to the economic issue, not just here in the United States, but around the world. I thought it was interesting. I'm seeing these two diametric opposites both popping up in the news today. Both quite interesting stories. But, you know, there was another really interesting story that came to mind recently, one that, Mr. Chris Hayes, I want to talk with you for a moment about. This was reported by the BBC earlier this week. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with politics or currency or anything like that. Not conspiracies, not UFOs, not aliens or hails from the Moho discontinuity. You know, I can't even say discontinuity. Seriously, I've got to get over this cold. Would you just talk for me, Christian? Do the show. Do the show for me. The microphone's yours.
Well, what does the BBC have to say? I mean, are they bringing back Fawlty Towers? Is that what's happening?
Nope, keep guessing. I'm going to go blow my nose or take an Alka-Seltzer or something.
They found a way to resurrect Aleister Crowley.
Close.
They've made a link between Aleister Crowley and British intelligence during World War II.
Not quite. No, well, actually, I wish they'd do that. But no, that's probably not going to come up for several more years. No, what we're talking about here is a creature. I was amazed to see that an animal, a cryptozoological animal, okay, an animal purported to exist but never confirmed.
They found a werewolf in Stonehenge.
No, they didn't. Oh. No, this story dealt with a creature that is purported to exist known as Mokalium Bembe. I've long been fascinated with the hunt for what some call Congo's Loch Ness Monster. And the BBC featured a fantastic article about this just this week. It's probably one of the longer articles that I've seen in a mainstream news source that discussed this alleged animal in a long, long time. The article reads that in the 1980s, Dr. Roy Mackel led two expedition teams to the vast Lukwala swamp and rainforest area of the Congo, which is inhabited by pygmies, on the hunt for this mysterious creature known as Mokalium Bembe, Africa's version of Scotland's Loch Ness Monster. Well, after a fashion at least. The Mokalium Bembe is reputed to be a large reptile-like creature with a long neck and a long tail. Now, despite being an herbivore, it is said to roar aggressively if approached by humans. Ivan Sanderson, the late cryptozoologist and author of Abominable Snowman Legend Come to Life, even talked about a personal experience traveling with pygmies by vote, or by vote. See, I've got the election on my mind. They were traveling by boat into the Congo, and at one point, as they were passing by this cave where this kind of portion of the river bended and kind of swirled, They said that they heard a tremendous roar. And then Sanderson said that there was a large hump about the size of a Volkswagen that went down into a foamy, red swirling pool of water. He didn't get a good look at it, but he heard this terrible noise, and that the pygmies began to leap about and say, Mokele Mbembe, Mokele Mbembe.
Had either he or the pygmies ever seen or heard a...
hippopotamus, you probably
hippopotamus thinking. Before, yeah.
Yes, many of them had. And that's the whole thing, is that many of these...
Because while they're herbivores, they'll eat a man.
They will. And they'll make noise, too. And they would probably be about the size of a Volkswagen. But now the thing is, and this is what's interesting. To date, there have been more than 50 expeditions to this portion of the Congo. But no scientific evidence, unless you include the large claw-shaped footprint recorded by a French missionary in 1776, has been brought back from the region. Many a Western explorer over the years has been gripped by this tantalizing possibility that they could discover a creature, and a formidable one at that, that has remained as yet unknown to science, possibly what many have called a living dinosaur. The only photographic images have been so fuzzy that they prove nothing. For instance, there was a Japanese film crew that managed to, while flying over Lake Teli, there in the Congo River Valley Basin, they managed to film some sort of an object, a large creature, moving through the waters of Lake Teli. But again, it was difficult to discern exactly what this was. And there is certainly no shortage of eyewitness reports. And this is where it gets interesting. While the natives are very, very knowledgeable about the various animals throughout that region, they also treat this creature, Mokele Mbembe, not only like it is a very real creature, but also like it is a animal distinct from hippopotami and from other animals known to exist in that region. One man recounted, I was in a boat on the river when I saw Mokele Mbembe. He began to chase us. Mokele Mbembe rose out of the water. We ran or he would have killed us. Paul Olin, a community development worker who spent more than 10 years living with the Bayaka in Congo and the Central African Republic, just to the north, say that the people who live in this area are in no doubt about the creature's existence. When people are sitting around the campfire talking, they talk about Mokele Mbembe. It's something that's a reality in their everyday life, he says. At the same time, he emphasizes their spiritual connection and mystical relationship with it. The way they see the world is a little different from the way that you and I see it, says Paul, but their eyewitness reports still need to be taken seriously, he said, in his view. Certain mythology does surround this creature, says Adam Davies, a British man who spends his spare time and money traveling the world in search of undocumented species, and has twice gone to Africa on the trail of the Mokele Mbembe. But when you put it to people, is this a real creature, they become quite affronted, and they consistently come out with their physical descriptions of this animal. Never dismiss tribal accounts on the basis that they must be taking or talking tosh because they are tribal. That's not right, and it's actually disrespectful, he says, and you wouldn't want to disrespect these pygmies because, according to them, the Mokele Mbembe is not only a very real animal, they do have a mystical connection with it, and there are some rather unique stories that kind of contribute to this alluring mystery about the Mokele Mbembe. When we come back after this break, I'll share one of my favorites with you here on the Grayling Report. And we will also continue to have more updates from the situation in Iowa as that's ongoing tonight. I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Grayling Report. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Micah Hanks of the Grayling Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. And at the end of the day, the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. So United Way is asking you to make a pledge. Tutor a child who needs help. Mentor a kid who needs someone on their side. Volunteer to read to children. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Be a reader. Tutor or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge now at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Back to the program with ongoing election updates and weird news from around the world. Where else could you possibly get that kind of a combination on a Tuesday night? Only here on the Graylian Report, touching on the most timely news of the day and also the stuff that you'll never hear anyplace else. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes. There's a dark energy here in the studio tonight. Yeah? A dark energy. What is that?
I think it's a sexy waitress.
No, I think it's the absence of a holy man who didn't make it into the program. I'm interested in hearing what your top 10 is going to be about tonight, Chris.
It's going to be pretty good, in my opinion. I just hope that I can adequately fill the shoes of our reigning top 10 list reading champion.
Is this the top 10 strangest top 10s of 2012? Well, 2011, I mean 2011.
Well, I've got that one too. I've got it was so weird. There's one that is the top 10 weirdest top 10 lists of 2011. And while that one's neat, I think the one I found elsewhere is far, far superior.
Okay, you didn't go and do something crazy like write one or anything, did you? I hear you said that you...
No, I'm only kidding.
Oh, gosh, you know...
Heaven forbid you actually write some original material. And maybe I did.
Well, see, that's what the producer's supposed to do. You're supposed to be booking guests. Hey, speaking of, you know, who we got coming up here in just the next couple of weeks? We've got Nigel Kerner, who's going to be on the program not this coming week, but the following week on the 17th. Next week, of course, we'll be broadcasting live from the Reynolds Mansion, so there will be some interesting guests there at Reynolds that will be joining us. But then the 17th, we'll have Nigel Kerner joining us to discuss his book. I think we're going to do a full 2 hours, actually, with Nigel Kerner discussing his book, Alien Grays and the Harvesting of Souls. A very dark subject, and, you know, his idea of what exactly alien grays are gets a little into the idea of a biological singularity like we've talked about some here on the program. It's an interview you will not want to miss, and that'll be on the 17th of January, that edition of the Graylian Report, and we'll have some other guests lined up that'll be fantastic and well worth tuning in to learn more about in the weeks to come. So that said, right now it's looking like Rick Santorum is leading again. This is according to Drudge Report again, 24.3%, with Mitt Romney falling up 23.6%, and Ron Paul still in third place, 21.8%.
Hey, Micah.
Yes, sir.
I mean no disrespect, but and I know you love politics so much, and as interesting it is as it is to talk about, can we talk about something that will have any impact or interest for our international listeners?
Well, yeah, of course.
Because I'm sure people in any other country don't care.
Oh, and I don't know about that.
Well, okay.
They might. You never know. Because
any other civilized country.
Well, let's go back to the heart of the Congo for just a moment, which, of course, unfortunately, I can't say that things are entirely civilized there. There's a lot of... What?
Speaking of Congo and Africa, did you know that the dialect of Haitian I speak is actually a very, very... rudimentary precursor to the Bantu or Kung languages?
I did not know that. Yes. That would certainly be something, I guess, that falls into the criteria of appeal to a wider
you know, broader global audience.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding either, by the way.
No. I didn't think you were.
But I don't kid a lot, you know. I do. But anyway, I was going to tell one of my favorite stories, though. Getting back to the Congo about the Mokele Mbembe. You know, there's a funny thing. A few weeks ago here on the program, we talked about, actually this was probably a few months ago, really. There was a man, I think it was in Thailand, who had captured a very large frog. Do you remember this story? They had photographs of this huge frog that they'd captured. And I think that the guy ended up selling it to a merchant, or a merchant had offered to buy it from him or something like that. There was a merchant involved somehow, but this guy ended up taking it home, cutting it up, and eating the huge frog. And it made him sick. Do you remember this?
No.
There are various reasons, you know, why people describe being, incurring sickness, I guess, following the consumption of large reptiles. Such was the case with a story regarding Mokele Mbembe. Believe it or not. Again, we're talking, if you're just joining the program, we're talking about a large cryptozoological monstrosity of sorts, an animal believed to exist, as yet unrecognized by science, described by the pygmies in various parts of the Congo. It's called Mokele Mbembe. Many describe Mokele Mbembe, which means essentially, loosely translated, one who stops the flow of rivers. They describe this creature, which is purported to kind of nestle down in the bends of rivers, is supposed to be, about the size of a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros, but, you know, most descriptions describe a very long neck and a serpentine kind of head. In other words, it resembles a much smaller, but, you know, again, in general shape, it's very similar to a brontosaurus or a saurian. Now, according to Paul Olin, who we mentioned earlier, the meaning of Mokele Mbembe may not mean just one who stops the flow of rivers. He's also said that the word could be interpreted to mean rainbow or even mystery. So if that interpretation of the name is to be believed, even the natives may be referring to the Mokele Mbembe as being a mystery beast. And of course, that's the very reason it falls into the cryptozoological justification by Western minds. So certainly there is a mythology, according to Adam Davies, that surrounds this creature. And he says that, you know, you don't want to make the mistake of calling this thing or asking, or, you know, the pygmies whether or not it is real. This is very much a real creature, according to the people there in this region. And indeed, this animal, though it has a mystical quality, is believed to be quite physical, quite real, and a part of their daily life. So much so that in the 1950s, it is said that on one occasion, a Mokele Mbembe was captured and killed by a group of the pygmies. And so when this animal was killed, what did they do? Well, what do you always do when you capture and kill a large animal? Of course, you don't want that meat to go to waste. And so the animal was brought back to a camp, and it was cooked and fed to the villagers that evening. And it was said during that experience that all who consumed the meat of the fallen Mokele Mbembe fell ill. They were all made sick by consuming the meat of this animal. Now, again, there could be any number of reasons why that might have actually occurred. But what is believed by the natives is that there is some sort of a mystical quality that this animal maintains, and that this creature, while in the West is perceived as being sort of a new species or something, maybe a throwback to ancient times and to even, you know, the dinosaurs. Well, the pygmies often refer to it as a god beast. Whether it was part of the show, whether there was somebody swimming under the water with flippers pushing up a cardboard piece across a lake, I couldn't tell you, reported the explorer Rory Nugent, who went to the Congo in search of Mokele Mbembe. He even wrote a book about his experience called Drums Along the Congo. In Drums Along the Congo, he says he saw an elegant French curve moving through the water. He described, yes, actually seeing the creature there in the waters of Lake Telly, but that he wasn't able to see exactly what it was. And taking foreigners on expeditions to try and find this Mokele Mbembe is a good money-making operation for those involved, Mr. Nugent, always the skeptic, has added. But remaining somewhat hopeful, even at 86 years old, Dr. Roy Mackel, one of the earliest scientists, zoologists, to take an interest in this, he says, I realize my bias, but I'm interested in discovering unknown species of animals. I think that Mokele Mbembe still exist, and there isn't just one, that they are still reproducing, And even at the age of 86, he says, I would dearly love to be alive if and when those animals are ever discovered. Now, I'll tell you what, if there is indeed something like that, a holdover from ancient times that still exists in the heart of the Congo, well, I too would be very interested in learning more about that. I mean, who wouldn't? And there was an animal, certainly wasn't similar to a dinosaur, but there was an animal believed to be part of the mythology of that region that ended up actually being real. It was a deer-like animal, if I recall correctly, called the okapi, that was discovered in that region several years ago. You know, animals are purported to exist all around the world that are not yet recognized by conventional science and yet are often reported. Bigfoot, of course, is one of these. The Sasquatch. Now, it seems pretty difficult even for me. I'll tell you this, a lot of people probably think I'm crazy because I'll tell you straight up, I used to once, a long time ago, be a 100% Bigfoot believer. And now, I think for the sake of being skeptical and being more rational, I'm 50-50. I've seen some compelling evidence, and I also realize there are a lot of people out there who are liars. There's a fellow who I met with recently, a journalist who joined the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization on a stakeout in West Virginia, who called me the other day, and damn it, I forgot to call him back. I've got to get in touch with him. I've been so busy over the new year. This has been really hectic. You know, Chris has been trimming his beard, and I've been working and slaving. And what have you been doing over the new year, by the way? Where have you been?
I would tell you, but I'd have to, make something up to make it sound interesting.
Yeah, but either way, you're going to say it in that sexy voice. I have to tell you about that.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I'm going to turn your
mic. I've told you several times that I'm a deep cover agent.
See, I'm turning your microphone way up there.
And I can't tell you any more than that, Mika.
That's why you talk like this all the time, isn't it? Huh? I'm Chris Hayes.
I'm Intercol.
you're really a Hadel, and that's the best that you... Actually, this right here is the best I can do. I probably don't sound like Elvis tonight. I probably sound like Gollum or Darth Vader or something, you know. I can barely breathe.
Just don't cut my hand off, okay?
I won't do that. Don't worry. No, listen. I probably sound like a cryptid is what I sound like. I sound like the Loveland frog because the frog in my throat. Listen to me, rabbit.
You kind of sound like...
Should never rib it on the air like that.
Like my favorite horror movie antagonist ever.
Who's that?
Buttcutter.
Buttcutter? Oh, yeah. Yeah, the greatest hero that never... Anti-hero that never was.
I'm gonna cut your butt.
That's right. I love you, Dad. Oh, man.
Touch me whenever, yo.
Some of those commercials are fantastic. You know, there was something else that we linked recently at GraylianReport.com that might be of interest to the listenership. Speaking of cryptid animals believed to exist, I first saw this one linked to Cryptomundo.com under the heading was a live Yeti captured in Russia. What was obviously a person stumbling around in a suit appeared on a newscast, and it was kind of bizarre looking. You know, this person in the suit seemed to be acting kind of childish. I put it up on the page, and I tried to be pretty ambiguous and not, even through my typing, I was trying to conceal my laughter a little bit. And immediately, Red Pill Junkie, our friend from DailyGrail.com, had posted on there. And what did he say? It's something along the lines of, aside from being an obvious hoax, maybe I can actually get the comment here real briefly. He says, yes, well, the hoax is absurdly evident, is what he said. What is not so evident is the purpose behind its promotion. Indeed, what it seemed to be was some sort of a New Year's expedition where children could come, and there were a variety of animatronic animals or something like that that would talk to the children and teach them things about wildlife. But among the exhibits was a person in this ape costume, and apparently when this was translated and Western sources got a hold of it, a few people at least looked at this and thought that they were talking about the capture of a real wild man, a real Yeti captured in Russia. I think another name for the animals in that particular part of the world is Alma or Almasti, perhaps. A lot of different names in the East. The Yeren also comes to mind. And actually, you know, we could even go on down there and note the Orang Pendek as well. So a lot of different varieties of animals that are supposed to be smack dab in the middle, somewhere placed between a monkey or an ape and a human. You know, often walking upright but having more ape-like characteristics. So that was featured at GraylianReport.com just as well. You'll want to check that one out when you get a chance. You know, I'm debating, Chris, whether we should actually go to a break early, because I really want to hear about this top 10 list that you've got lined up. I'm just wondering, though, if it's of you know, enough interest that do you need extra time for this, or is this, I mean, do we have to?
Well, don't we ordinarily do our top 10 lists like at the last 5 minutes of the show?
Well, usually, yeah, the last 5 to 10. So I'm assuming we probably don't need a whole lot more time. But
and plus, since I'm reading it off, I'm not going to be interrupting myself.
Well, I'm
like
going to be
interrupt Matt.
I'm going to be interrupting you, though.
Yeah, but I'm the big interrupter.
Where is Matt? Is he in the field? Is he doing field work tonight?
I don't know.
Is he just slacking?
I don't know. I don't want to make any assumptions. I don't want to make one assumption. I don't want to make 10 assumptions. I just don't know.
Well, I'm a little concerned. Not so much because of the top 10 that's coming up, but you know, you being a zombie, you might find this interesting. Did you see where MSNBC.com recently reported about a kind of fly parasite that turns honeybees into, get this, zombies? Uh-huh. You see that? Yes, indeed. If deadly viruses and fungi weren't enough, honeybees in North America now must also deal with a fly parasite that causes them to leave their hive and die after wandering about in a zombie-like stupor. There you go, Chris. Real zombies. Zombies.
You say real zombies like zombies aren't already real.
I know they're real. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm accompanied in studio every evening or every Tuesday from 8 to 11 by a real live zombie.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Scientists previously found that the parasitic fly, Apophyscephalus borealis, infects and ultimately kills bumblebees and paper wasps, while the decapitating fly, an insect of the same genus, implants its eggs in ants, who, you remember these guys, the ants then head, or their heads pop off after the fly larvae devour the ants' brains and dissolve their connective tissues. Wow.
That's a different ant story than what I told.
Okay, no, wait, the one that you were telling was about ants. What was it?
It was about the fungus.
And the ants do what?
It's
under the influence of this fungus.
Yeah, the ants get this fungus and it basically kills them, and then reanimates them just enough to crawl up to the top of this specific tree, where once up there they kind of cling to the bottom of a leaf, and a sprout of the fungus pops out of their head, out of the top of their head, and then rains its spores down from the top of the tree.
Wow, that's somewhat similar here, though, because, again, you know, this decapitating fly implants its eggs in ants whose heads pop off after the fly larvae devour the ants' brains. But, okay, now researchers have discovered that honeybees parasitized. Did you know about that word? Parasitism? You suffer from parasitism, and you've been parasitized. Well, researchers have discovered that honeybees parasitized by the A. borealis in 24 of 31 sites across the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as other commercial hives in California and South Dakota. You know, the honeybees these days, they just can't get a break. You know, if it's not succumbing to, you know, what was it that was believed to be causing disorientation among honeybees? I think it was cell phone towers, communication systems and things like this, perhaps Wi-Fi internet also was a source. It was leading to disorientation, and basically a lot of wildlife biologists have asserted that if we don't have honeybees, then we don't have food. You know, it's going to be incredibly difficult for us to, you know, allow the vegetables that we grow and the fruits and vegetables and things to pollinate in the absence of honeybees, to carry that pollen from plant to plant. So this is kind of terrifying in a number of ways. Genetic tests revealed that some of the bees and flies were infected with deformed wing virus and the fungus known as Nosema serenae, both of which have been implicated in colony collapse disorder, which is the term for this ongoing problem. The scientists believe that more research into the parasitized bees and their behavior could yield new insights into this devastating disorder. We'll keep an eye on this one because, again, I think that we should never underestimate the potentials for disaster in the event that the honeybees indeed are so lacking in numbers that our food crops aren't able to be properly pollinated. There was another report that was issued this week by MSNBC, also Alien World of sorts. You know, we talk about a lot of alien worlds on this program, but the alien world in question here was discovered, guess where? In the Antarctic deep sea vents. There constantly seem to be finding they, of course, you know, being scientists, we constantly seem to be finding new species of crabs and you know, worms and also amoebic life forms and things like that that are capable of existing. There are really, we brought this term up on the show recently, extremophiles. Extremophiles being animals that exist in, well, of course, extreme circumstances, extreme heat at extreme depths where extreme pressure may make such areas uninhabitable for the vast majority of animals. But nonetheless, we never cease to be amazed by the number of animals that are able to collect in worlds unlike our own, often found at the very deepest depths of Earth's oceans. Again, it calls to mind the question of why do we continue to hold a fascination with deep space when indeed the deep oceans are host to a multitude of mysteries and even possibly alien worlds of sorts. Well, scientists doing their first exploring of deep sea events in the Antarctic have uncovered a world unlike anything found around other hydrothermal vents, one populated by new species of anemones, predatory sea stars, and piles of hairy-chested yeti crabs. Of course, the infamous yeti crabs. It was almost like a sight from another planet, said expedition leader Alex Rogers, a professor of zoology at Oxford University. Even in the eye-popping world of deep-sea vents, the Antarctic discoveries stand out, with the unfamiliar species of crabs found crowded in piles around the warm waters emanating from the seafloor. Many of the animals found at the vents have never been found at hydrothermal vents in other oceans, Rogers said. To see these animals in such huge densities was simply amazing, Rogers told Live Science. In the dayless world of deep-sea vents, energy comes not from the sun, but from the hydrothermal energy generated in the oceanic crust. The yeti crabs, of course, described by or named so for the hair-like protrusions that grow around them, and of course they're white, often existing at depths in the ocean where I guess they lack certain pigment. I'm hypothesizing that that's the reason for their light color, kind of like cave salamanders and things like that.
They kind of look like ticks.
They do, don't they?
That's gross.
They're a little unwholesome looking, yes.
They're little jerks.
But the yeti crabs seem to cultivate little gardens of bacteria. Oh, how lovely, little bacteria gardens. And they guess where they put these, of course, on their hairy yeti chests, which are covered with these hairy little tendrils I've mentioned. These bacterial mats almost certainly provide the crabs with sustenance, Rogers said. In turn, predatory seven-armed sea stars stalk the periphery of the vents, snacking on unfortunate crabs. They've linked video. Maybe we'll get this one up in the show notes as well so that people can enjoy that video of sea crabs with bacterial manifestations on their chests being snacked upon by other extremophiles. Very, very strange stuff. Okay, well, it's time to go ahead and pay the bills. When we do come back after this break, we're going to wrap up this week's edition of the Graylian Report. If there is any new news coming out in Iowa, well, it may be a little early yet, and if there's nothing to report, then we'll just get on to this mysterious top 10 list that our producer and, well, engineer for the evening, at the very least, Mr. Chris Hayes, has procured for us. I'm anxious to find out what's on his mind, and that's what a good producer does. He writes portions of the show, does show prep, and of course he pushes all the right buttons in the absence of the kind-eyed engineer. I, on the other hand, am the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Welcome back to the program. 828-398-4886 to call us here on the program with last-minute thoughts. This is the final segment of this week's edition of the Graylian Report. See, I think I figured out what it was. Matt Oakley must have gotten a new motorcycle. That's why he's out tonight. He decided to go riding. No, you'd have to be crazy to go out riding tonight. Where we are, it is about 21 degrees outside right now. That's why we always stay in a temperature-controlled environment here in our bunker, our warm little bunker. Hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface. Our final Iowa update for the evening. We'll leave you with this one. Mitt Romney at 25.2%. Rick Santorum following up at 24.0%. And Ron Paul still in third place at 21.3%. But that said, the information that will now be imparted to the listenership may be a burden to them. I think we should go ahead and just put out disclaimers to people. You know, the listenership that we've come to cherish and adore so much, we mean always to do good by them, and therefore, this is why we work hard to bring them news. This is why we bring them insight into strange phenomena, you know, so that they can better cope with everyday existence. And now, Chris Hayes is going to bring us a top 10 that he's put together that is guaranteed to thrill and amaze, no doubt. More of that strange information that we like to appeal to Chris for from time to time here on the program. Chris, why don't you take it away? I'm very interested in hearing what your top 10 is, and unfortunately, you've only got, well, about 9.5 minutes to fit 10 tops in, I guess. Is that what you call them? So.
Well, I guess I'll have to make it quick.
Yeah. What is your top 10, first of all?
The top 10 list tonight is top 10 reasons Matt couldn't make it to the show tonight.
Top 10 reasons Matt the Reverend Oakley couldn't be in studio tonight. Yeah, because he was very nebulous. I would even say that Matt almost didn't seem to, you know, this is very strange. We rely on having, you know, a production staff here in the studio. And then even outside the studio, there are so many on a weekly basis that contribute to this program. And it's funny because I constantly get emails from people talking about Micah, you and the show and your fabulous staff. We get so many compliments from staffers here on the program. It's a shame that one of them couldn't be here tonight, and yet his absence appears to be a mystery. Now, I don't want people to get all concerned. We have heard a little bit from Matt, but we are more concerned not about, you know, the fact that he's not here, but his reason for being absent. So, Chris, I think this will be, you know, quite fortuitous that you have a top 10 that will help us, you know, go over the possibilities, the potentials that we may be facing, and whether or not we'll have an engineer next week.
Oh, I surely will. And in traditional top 10 list form, I'm going to read it in descending order. So I'm going to be starting at number 10 and working my way to number 1.
Okay, very good.
All right. Okay, number 10.
Number 10!
His neighborhood has a or is a unique microclimate which doesn't allow ice to melt ever.
Yes, the icy roads in western North Carolina may have prevented our engineer from making it to Graylin International Headquarters. Where
once it ices the first time in Asheville, if his neighborhood gets ice, he's stuck until spring.
Well, it looks like we're going to be doing a two-piece gig here for a while then, I think.
Oh, no.
Next.
Number nine. And, okay, I've got some of these in quotation marks, which means it's something Matt would say, so I'm going to do my best to imitate
his
voice.
A Matt impersonation. Okay.
All right, number nine.
Yeah, what do you mean we've done a show every single Tuesday night since May?
Oh, man. Okay. Number eight.
Number eight.
The election isn't even until Thursday, guys.
That's right, yes. That's right. Thank you for the update.
Number seven. Well, I've got to take a shower, change clothes, and eat a big family dinner first, so it'll be like, you know, 6 hours.
A big family dinner, yes. That was a late dinner, you know. Well, unless you're West Coast time,
well,
you know.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, no, he eats a big family for dinner.
A family of Hadels, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I thought that only one member of the Graylin staff ever consumed Hadels. We try not to do that, you know. I don't do it.
Knowingly.
I don't know what you sickos do. I don't do it.
Okay, number six. Hey, guys, I just got a date.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's number six.
Oh, okay. Number five.
Number five. We only need to do one show a week. Dude,
you know, according to the listenership, that is not the most often expressed sentiment. Indeed, I think there's a public outcry for more than one show per week. We're working on that, folks. 2012. Maybe that's our latest New Year's resolution, Chris, to try and work in more than one show per week.
Okay, I'm good doing it daily.
Where are we now? Yeah, right. Number four.
Yeah, number four. I just want some time to, you know, sit down and actually work on my novel.
On his novel. You know, Matt's been telling me for months now that he's been working on a novel. I've never seen... Well, no, I did see something one time, but I mean, no, it's been more than months. I think he's been telling me since 1992 he's working on a novel.
Yeah.
So where's the novel? He'd better be at home working on the novel tonight.
I don't know where the novel is.
He'd better either be sick in bed or working on that. He'd better be done with the novel next time I see
him.
Done with the novel.
It better already be published.
If he's going to do the show, he's got to be done with the novel.
All right, number three.
Number three.
Santa got pissed off over the bad press Matt gave him 2 weeks ago and took him to the North Pole for a lifetime of toy-related servitude and anal probes.
Well, see, there you go. That's nothing we didn't know. What number are we on right now?
We're on number two now.
Okay, number two. Number two.
Number two. Reverend with kind eyes finally ran off and eloped with Hadel High Priest's daughter thing.
Ah.
She must be one sweet potato.
One sweet potato. Oh, yes. No. And our final number one.
And number one. Well, cripes, I meant to come over, but I fell through a wormhole and now I'm at the yacht. And there's this smoking broad who's into me.
Yes, the old Acme portable hole. You slip through one, you end up at a bar someplace, and all of a sudden there's this gangly googly-eyed babe with long legs who's looking into you, and, well, you're looking at her, and you know how it goes. So, well, I guess that about wraps it up for this week's edition of the program. For all those here present and all those who couldn't join us in the studio this week, we thank all of our listenership, of course, and on behalf of John Anderson, Dick Oakley, Matt Oakley, Chris Hayes, Holly, even Stephen Accounting, and of course, yours truly, Micah Hanks. This is the Graylin Report, your weekly hub for the strange and unusual, broadcasting every Tuesday from 8 to 11 p.m. from our dark little corner of the web. Hey, Happy New Year, everyone, and thank you for bringing in the new year in style with us here from the dark depths of the Moho Discontinuity. We'll see you again next week, and in the meantime, my friends, as always, stay strange.